One cell, is this on?
Please, ban the basketball housewives.
Set the dog bounty hunter coming to an end.
Who the fuck? What the fuck? Why?
My comic book nerd brain just cannot accept it.
That's the dumbest fucking premise for a show I've ever heard in my life.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay ass accent, them cheap ass cigars, your yuck mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
Fourth pack is back, cause I'm mass destruction. Guess who's here? The bad boys arrest me. Just in competition when the war does the mission. Not no mercy, see the race like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. Point number one, just believe that you don't want to test the belt. I'll be a boy with them, coming to grave with them, you're never walking out again. So you're back on the wolf pack. So I'm telling you back on the wolf pack. You might wind up in a body bag.
And welcome to another exciting episode of the Click Nation Comic Book Chronicles. I'm your host, Tim Deal Double G. See, I'm mad I didn't think to wear my shades during this episode.
What are we, the Men in Black now?
No effects for me. But I am joined tonight by my two co-hosts. First up, Classic Material. Give some plugs out for yourself. Let people know who you are.
Hey, everyone. Yes, this is Classic Material. I'm back this week for Comic Book Chronicles. You can find me on the Cold Slither Podcast, coldslitherpodcast.com. I'm also the host of the Cold Slither Podcast, co-hosting with Tim D-O-double-G right here at Eclectic. And I'm also the host of Classic Team Up, which is our brand new podcast. But you can find all of that at coldslitherpodcast.com. Classic Material.
Thank you. Thank you, Classic. And our other co-host is Agent underscore 70.
That's right, Agent 70 in the house.
Let them know where they can find you online.
You can find me at Twitter at Agent underscore 70, and you can see me at the Slither Madness tournament. Right now, my prediction is right at the top.
First place.
That's right.
Uh-oh, I actually need to tune into this thing, huh? So, that is our panel tonight, and I'm, of course, Tim D-O-double-G. My Twitter is at Tim D-O-G-G-9-8. And also follow the Click Nation's official Twitter account at The Click Nation. Check us out online, theclicknation.com. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/theclicknation. Let's see, we're on the YouTube, youtube.com/TheClickNation. Subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio to The Click Nation, where you can find The Click Nation podcast and also our Comic Book Chronicles podcast, at least the audio versions of them. So you can go back and re-listen to the show. And let's see, shout-outs to PCN underscore Dirt, who is usually with us on Thursday nights, but he couldn't be with us tonight.
Hey, life gets in the way, buddy.
Yep.
We'll miss you, buddy.
See you next week.
He's not dead, people. But you can follow him on Twitter at PCN underscore dirt. And also check out his website, popculturenetwork.com. He is the provider of all the comic books I review early. Thanks to him. And also shout outs real quick to comicrelated.com, who are nice enough to post up our, or at least my podcast for the Click Nation website. So that's comicrelated.com. They have plenty of comic-related podcasts you can go and check out also. So with all that out the way, I figured first we'd start off talking about some comic book news, and then we can get into discussing the comic books of the week that we read.
All righty.
Sound good?
Sounds excellent.
Sounds good.
Sounds good. People like it. All right. Let's see. First bit of news. Oh, let's see. We can talk about the Wolverine trailer that was released this week. Who here watched it?
I stayed away from it.
Crickets.
I actually did watch it. And you know what? Looks real damn good.
I saw some pictures, so that's, you know, that's as much as I wanted to spoil myself.
Yeah, without giving too much away, he is in Japan, and it's not a walk in the park for old Wolverine. He's going to be dealing with some really heavy stuff. And I can tell you that, and this isn't a spoiler because he's in Japan, there are ninjas.
Plenty of ninjas.
And lots of ninjas. So, yeah. Looks real good.
They also revealed from the pictures I saw the looks for Mariko Yoshida and Yukio.
Yep.
What did you guys think of the looks of? I think, you know, Mariko wasn't, you know, they weren't really going to mess with her. But what did you guys think of the way they made Yukio look?
The whole trailer, I was just kind of meh to it. Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those trailers, like, you know, they kind of just flashed action, scene, you know.
Gotcha.
And they put that Inception music in the background, or something, you know. But I thought Yukio, I mean, she seemed kind of young.
Yeah, with the long hair, that's what bugged me. You know, like, Tim, did you read that the Miller Claremont Wolverine Limited series that they take a lot of this stuff from?
No, I haven't read it.
You have to read that. I'm sure Classic has read it.
Oh, yeah. Long time.
Gotta read that. That is like...
Who drew it?
Frank Miller.
Oh, Frank Miller. Okay.
Frank Miller. Like, yeah. You know, like, that's... Wolverine. Yeah, that's like a classic story. You definitely need to read that. And, you know, one of the things, you know, I'm not really spoiling anything. She's got, like, short hair. And, like, it kind of ties into some Uncanny X-Men stories after... after this Wolverine Limited series, you know, Yukio with the short hair. So, you know, if you go back and read that stuff, you know, you see where they took, they're probably taking a lot of the source material from. And, you know, those are like, you know, I hate to say this, those are probably like the very best Wolverine stories, you know, right at the top of the list.
Yeah. And another character that, you know, we saw in there was Viper. In the trailer.
Yes, you know, I did see the pictures of that. Yeah. I did see some pictures of that. You know, I'm not so happy about the look, but, you know, it's, we'll see how it goes in the rest of the movie, you know?
Yeah. Well, I can't say she was rather vipery.
Yeah, no, I agree. What do you think, Tim?
I guess we can talk about what was shown in the trailer, which may be a little bit spoilerific. I guess the gist of the movie is Wolverine saved this person back from an atomic bomb blast many years ago. And as his dying wish, the guy wants to let Wolverine live life as a regular person by taking away his healing factor so he can age and eventually die.
Yeah.
Not sure how that's like.
Wow, spoilers. Holy cow. I didn't know that. That's why I didn't watch the trailer.
That's pretty much the gist of the movie. And, you know, he goes through the whole movie or most of the movie. It seems like he just goes through it, you know, getting injured and healing the old fashioned way.
No kidding.
Yeah. So that's kind of where, you know, that makes it a movie because, you know, I always think of Wolverine. I'm like, this guy's so overdone. Like, he's got the adamantium skeleton. He's got the claws. He got the healing factor. And if I recall correctly, the original X-Men, they didn't have healing factor and all this other stuff. They just kept introducing all this other, you know, these other things. And it was like stacking the deck so that Wolverine's a cool character. Let's add something else to him, you know, so that the kids love him, you know. And then, you know, in the 80s, they started shoving him down everyone's throat with the marketing and stuff. I remember that that iconic Wolverine poster used to always be up in like Forbidden Planet. And I was just like, geez, man, if Wolverine had less powers or less of one of these things, you know, he'd be a little more relatable. But now it's just, you know, it's like overloaded. It's like a superstar team, you know, with three superstars on it in the NBA, not naming any.
See, I'm actually a fan of Wolverine, you know, like I read, you know, like a lot of it comes from, you know, that Miller graphic novel and, you know, the limited series, the Wolverine limited series. And, you know, a lot of the early stories and a lot of it is really character based because he's so, you know, he's basically, you know, got his powers and abilities stacked. You know, he's got such a stacked deck that, you know, when someone does take him down a couple of pegs, you know, it's, you know, means a lot. And it's some character development going on. But, I'm a fan and, you know, I don't see why the movie can't be about his character, but I guess they've already done so much with the X-Men movies, you know, with developing his character, they got to, you know, make this artificial, you know, this plot device, you know, so that his, you know, powers are failing him. What else is new, right?
Well, what I'm not clear on and what might surprise me is when this takes place, like, is this before or after the X-Men movies? You know, that's that.
They say it takes place after X-Men 3.
Yeah, which is a different scene than what we're used to because most of, you know, as we know, I think the Wolverine in Japan was before, or it wasn't before he joined the X-Men, but it was kind of like, you know, it's so far back in its history that, you know, you would think that this story would be told before.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And so we've got some response from Twitter. Let's see. Black and Nerdy, I believe is what he wanted to be called. He says, the Wolverine trailer seems underwhelming. Yukio looked odd. I agree with the underwhelming part.
And I agree with the Yukio looking odd.
Yeah. She looked like she was 12. Actually, all the females in the movie looked like they were 12, except for Viper.
Women.
Asian women, schism.
And our man in the rafters, William B. West, says, yeah, I'm disappointed in this Wolverine excitement. Black and Nerdy also says his claws were a part of his gloves.
You know what would make this Wolverine movie very exciting? A cameo by Scott Summers.
The Jean Grey cameo is not exciting
enough. Get your damn hands off my woman, Wolverine. I'm not dead. Yeah, let's go. Let's go.
All right, so that's the Wolverine. I guess it comes out sometime this summer, so we have that to look forward to.
Yep.
Yeah.
And let's see. Marvel also announced that they're releasing an Avengers graphic novel called Avengers Endless Wartime.
Yep.
Let me click the link for that real quick. All right. Anyone aware of that, this news?
Yes, Mike McCone is doing the art, and Warren Ellis is writing it, I believe.
I'll tell you in a second.
I'm almost sure now. I'm going to pull it up.
Tell me who's writing this.
I believe it's Warren Ellis.
Warren Ellis is writing it. I remember that. And, yeah, McCone is doing the art, whoever that is.
He's not bad. He's not bad. He's actually a really nice British guy in person. Met him at a con.
I looked at the art for it because they released a couple pages from it. It looked nice, the art.
Yeah, he's got a very clean style.
Colors were pretty.
Yeah, it's a very clean, you know, like his line, you know, the line work is very clean. You know, very, you know, like the figures are defined. It's not like overly detailed. It's not like hyper detailed, like kind of like what some of the fan favorite artists are nowadays. Mm-hmm. So the best way I would describe it is very clean.
Okay. And Mark in the edit on Twitter says, wait, did you see that you say this is taking place after X3? That's what I've heard. Because originally before they even made Wolverine, work on Wolverine, they were saying that it was going to take place in the past. But then recently, they were saying it was going to take place after X3. Wow. Take that for what you will.
Well, I guess we'll see.
Yeah. So, yeah, Avengers, graphic novel, Wartime. Check that out. not sure. See, does it say when exactly that is going to be in stores or available to buy online? If I can see, find it real quick. Oh, Marvel list the release date as October 2nd, 2013, and the price at $24.99.
That's a while.
Yeah. It's supposed to be like 110 pages, so this is, you know,
a lot to look forward to, people.
Quite an epic. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A lot to look forward to. Let's see, what else we got? Black and Nerdy on Twitter says there was an image of Gene in the trailer. And he also says, Mike McCone's art is great. I loved him on Exiles and Teen Titans. Okay, and we have a substitute for PCN for tonight. I'll leave this to be a surprise. Let me add this individual.
Double fanfare.
Yeah. Well, we got to do the drum roll.
See how quickly he comes on. Spoiler, it's a he. But as we wait for him, let me find another news article. Oh, wait.
Oh!
There he goes.
Hey, guys.
Hey, it's Willie B.
Willkommen.
Sting comes down from the rafters.
Yeah, I got tired of listening. I was like, I want to talk too.
There you go. Sorry, getting everything wrong.
So let to backtrack.
We didn't get anything wrong.
I know you want to say something about Wolverine, Will.
Nah, I mean, I'm cool. I can't be that guy because I honestly didn't see the trailer. I just don't care. I was having this conversation with some people earlier in the week where the biggest problem with the cinematic Wolverine, well, part of it is because of Hugh Jackman. Like, the audience loves him so much, he's not allowed to really truly be Wolverine. If you go back and look at X-Men Origins Wolverine, the biggest problem with that movie is that nothing was Logan's fault. Yeah. Like, Logan sad the entire movie because he never stopped Creed from doing bad things. But in the comic, Logan did bad things. Mm-hmm. So they've absolved him of all guilt. It's the fact of like, oh, he can't remember his past, so it's not really his fault, but maybe he could have stopped Creed. It's like, no, he killed a lot of people. I was describing it like the normal Joe did some terrible stuff in Vietnam. Think about what Logan did in that same exact war. So yeah. I just kind of hope I hate Wolverine in Japan. Like, that stuff's boring to me.
Oh, my goodness.
It's really boring.
It is. I read that miniseries last summer, and it just did nothing for me. I know that Yukio is more important for Storm than she is for Wolverine in a lot of ways, but it does nothing for me. So, yeah.
Well, I'm in the minority on this panel, but, you know, blasphemy, I say.
Oh, you can take it or leave it in my case. Yeah. Wolverine has always been too tall, or, you know, Hugh Jackman has always been too tall for that role. But, you know, it's like we're at the fourth or fifth movie now. So, yeah, you kind of take it for what it's worth.
Yeah.
And
they just make him squat a little bit every time he poses to make him look shorter.
He hunches,
you know?
Yeah.
I don't like that he always gets so, like, bulky for the role. That's not necessarily Wolverine is about 5'3 and about 300 pounds because of the adamantium. Like, he's not necessarily a jacked dude. He's just stocky.
You know, it depends on, you know, I think it depends on the artist. But, yeah, I agree with you on that one. But, you know, he has to get thick because if he wasn't, you know, built up, he would look just too long, too tall, and too lean, you know?
So, well, he should do what Wolverine does, which is overindulge on beer and cigars and, like, you know, develop that stockiness that way and, you know, eat a whole chicken.
And he decided to lose the trademark Wolverine mane of hair.
Yeah, I noticed that. They cut that down a little bit.
Yeah, it's close cropped. But anyway, I got another topic I want to bring up to my panel here. Came up a couple of nights ago on Twitter when people, I forget who, I think it was Brian Bendis was tweeting people, I guess, who had gotten themselves a copy of Age of Ultron number 3 and were reading it, and they were shocked by the last panel. So I want to ask if knowing that a comic book already has a surprise at the end of it, does that ruin reading the comic book for you? You guys say you're not spoiled because you don't know what the surprise is at the end. You just know that there is something surprising at the end of the book. Oh. So does that ruin the book for you? I'll start with Classic.
Well, that's the way the comics are now. You know, we've come to expect that, you know, that back page, you know, that splash page or that back page, you know, shocker that's supposed to get us, you know, to the cliffhanger that's supposed to get us to buy the next issue. If it was all neatly tied up, the end, there'd be no reason to come in for the next issue unless it's like build up to another story arc. So I could see, you know, and I'm used to that. I used to buy comics that way. I used to go into the shop and I would like pull a comic off the rack and go right to the last page and like just instantly spoil the whole thing. But then it was like I worked backwards from there. If it was that good or that shocking, I'd want to know what led to that. So I would still buy the book and go through the progression and find out, you know, how did Venom get on the last page or who, you know, the alien costume or something. But other than that, you know, I don't think it spoils it for me that there's a shocker, because that's all comics are now. The universe will never be the same again. The status quo has changed. You know, in the Marvel Universe, that's all the hype that we get every time we get a book. So, you know, I'm shocked when there isn't a big splash cliffhanger at the end.
Okay. Agent 70?
I have to agree with Classic Material here. You know, although I wasn't prone to flipping to the back page, you know, when I walked into a comic book shop, you know, I definitely expect there to be a shocking last page or two, especially if I know a book is in the middle of like a long running story. Let's say it's like a 4 or 5 part story. You know, you can sort of tell some issues are done in one, but we've been reading comics for so long. We're used to it by now.
Yeah.
You know?
I pretty much agree with both of you. Spoilers don't bother me for one thing, even if I don't know what the surprise is at the end, I'll still read the book waiting to see what happens, and it doesn't ruin the experience for me. And now, I guess it's good I say, Will Last, you're like our Simon Cowell. Yeah.
Absolutely dreadful. No, like, it depends. I'm kind of like Classic. I don't care because I want to see what led to that. I think what bothers me in terms of spoilers is outside of the industry stuff. Like, I hate the New York Post reveals and stuff like that, because that brings in the speculators. And if it brings in the speculators, it lessens your chance to be able to get this book if it's not a book you normally pick up. Or if it's a book you casually follow, then Johnny Come Lately is going to come in the shop and buy it. Because, like, oh, man, this hot alien angel chick from 20 years ago is now in the Marvel Universe. Where's that issue? And then they read it. And it doesn't make any sense to them because they haven't been following it. So I hate that, like, spillover. But I don't really – I expect that last page reveal. So you going to tell us what happened in Age of Ultron? Because I'm not buying that thing.
Oh, we'll get to it when we get to reviewing the books for the week, which actually will be coming up, I guess, in the next segment. So, yeah, I guess we can let me make sure I have any more news.
Tim, well, I don't know if you could pull up the info for this, but isn't DC coming out with like a villains documentary or something?
Yeah, I've read that somewhere. Let me quickly look. While I'm doing that, I think I saw a tweet come in. Mark in the edit on Twitter says, I said this earlier, but am I the only one mad at how Age of Ultron handled Black Panther?
Oh, no, he's not.
You mean...
We'll get to it. But he's not the only one.
Yeah, but you know, and we'll talk about this. But all bets seem to be off with Age of Ultron right now. Okay. You know,
well, I'm looking for that. I see some other quick news. Once upon a time, the ABC drama, whatever it's called. I'm not sure what category it falls into. It's getting the graphic novel from Marvel.
Mm.
I sent that to Eclectic because he's a fan.
So basically Marvel's just trying to have their own Fables.
Yeah, with the already established franchise.
Oh, yeah, well, Disney does own ABC and Marvel. What I want to know is, when is Scandal going to get a graphic novel? Yeah, Olivia Pope. Yeah.
I don't know if I want the Scandal crowd in comic book stores.
I was going to say, that would finally bring black people into comics since, like, the Milestone line. You would have, like, Static and Scandal crossover.
Static cover the Scandal for her services for Olivia Pope.
Yeah, Olivia Pope has to help Static clear his name.
Exactly.
I don't know. How would you do word balloons for a Scandal comic book, because everyone talks so fast in there, like, what, everything just be run on sentences? In
they
the
just get Bendis balloons to write it.
Yeah.
Or we. Touche.
And of course, you know, Olivia either ends up with Black Nick Fury or Black Panther or Luke Cage or Falcon, because they love to keep us together.
Wow. Yeah, only in the comic book industry would she fall for the black character, huh?
Misty Knight.
She might fall for Captain America.
The Patriot?
Yeah.
The one that doesn't talk?
Right. Yeah.
No, that would break the internet.
Yeah.
Captain America's with the darkie.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that'd be in the New York Post tomorrow.
He didn't fight a war for this.
It does get lonely behind that shield.
I can't find an article for that, at least not quickly.
People lost their minds when the truth came out, because that was basically like, the first Captain America was black.
Yeah.
How dare they?
When Will Smith was rumored to be playing Captain America at one point.
Oh.
I saw outrage at that on the internet.
Oh, Will Smith is always rumored to play something. I was saying we should have a film festival one day with all the movies that Will Smith has turned down. That would be epic. That would be like a great time right there, because you can watch like the entire Matrix trilogy, and, you know, some other stuff. Because I always like to hear that. Hey, you know, Will Smith was supposed to play the lead in this movie and he turned it down. I'm like, okay.
I think Will Smith's the first guy to get every script in Hollywood, and then he just sits on it. So they say, oh, yeah, he's going to play it, but it's just he hasn't gotten back to him. He's, like, using them as coasters.
Exactly. And then they had Tom Cruise, and he, you know, but they got to give him, like, a milk crate to.
No!
He uses it to negotiate with.
Exactly. No, he lets Jada read it, and if she doesn't like it, then forget it. But yeah, I think I've got the article. It's on Crave Online, but they're releasing a documentary, DC Comics is, about the villains of DC, the DC universe, and it's just profiling them. So like Joker, Sinestro, Lex Luthor, and Chief Creative Officer Jeff Johns, nice title, says the film's going to begin production this weekend in conjunction with WonderCon in Anaheim. And so there's no release date, but later this year, because they're trying to make 2013 the year of the villain. It's called Necessary Evil, Villains of DC Comics, and it's narrated by Christopher Lee.
What's
so the
point?
So be on the lookout for that.
Yeah.
Who's that? Cares, I see.
Who's that marketed to? Like, really, what's the point?
The people that like villains.
Yeah. Eclectic. Yeah.
Eclectic.
Oh, great. That's not going to earn me any points. Anyway. Okay, hashtag appreciation.
Yeah, but here's the thing, though. I mean, that's probably the most intriguing aspect of the DC Universe other than Batman, or, you know, it's Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. I don't know how intriguing Wonder Woman is, but it's the villains. It's the Joker. It's Lex Luthor. You know, that's really what gets people, I guess, if they are going, tuning into the DC Universe, coming back. Yeah, so this is kind of like that Legion of Doom type of thing, you know, bringing that together. But, you know, they're going to, I guess, expand it, talk about, like, Black Adam and Solomon Grundy, Sinestro. Oh, I mean, Marvel should do this.
All right. I think with that out the way, we can talk about the actual books that came out this week. Does anyone have a book they want to start off with? I'll let Agent 70 pick.
All righty. You want to start out with the big one, Age of Ultron 3?
Yeah.
Let's go for it.
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's pull that up.
This showed more of the resistance heroes who are still left alive, sort of coming up with a game plan on what to do.
All right. And this is the first issue where it kind of helped to read the tie-in issues.
Yeah.
You know, the tie-in issues that came out this week, Superior Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four tie-in issues actually, you know, contributed to reading the main miniseries. So, you know, kudos to those stories for actually helping out.
Yeah,
you know, those tie-ins will always help.
I haven't read the Fantastic Four one yet, but I read the Superior Spider-Man, and I actually liked it. I liked the art by Dexter Soy, and who wrote it? Was it Yost? Did Yost write it?
I want to see Yost.
Yeah, yes. Since he's doing Avenging Spider-Man. It's funny, a couple earlier in the week, I was tweeting how much I enjoyed
Kristen's Gage.
Is Gage?
Yes.
Mm.
Okay. I thought I was saying how I enjoyed it and enjoyed the art and whatnot, and Dexter Sory favored it this morning.
No kidding.
So you very sort of nice. Back to last week, how we were saying the ghost searching for your name on Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, yeah. Like Victor Newman.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't say it's a critique of Dexter Sory's art, but it makes it look like anime Spider-Man.
I like that, though.
Yeah.
All right.
But the colors and inks were nice on it, too.
Yeah.
I think that helped.
Yeah, well, it was a little bit anime. Yeah, I could definitely see the anime.
Yeah, like, I could see that playing out as, like, a Spider-Man. Like, if they made a Spider-Man anime, that's how it would look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And, of course, we see Spider-Man. It's basically Peter Parker because, you know, his costume is still ripped up as it's been through all of Age of Ultron. And, you know, as Doc Ock in his brain, you know, he basically comes up with a scheme. He's supposed to go on a mission for Iron Man to, like, try and disable the Ultrons with, like, some kind of bombs. But he decides, well, I'm smarter than all these Avengers and Iron Man. I'm just going to try to take over Ultron myself using my robots, my nanobots, or what do you call them, Spider-Bots.
Right.
Spider-Bots. And, you know, he's almost successful, but it doesn't happen. Ultron outsmarts him. And so he does have to go to Plan B, which is detonating the bombs, which he doesn't get to do. But he returns back to base. And right.
And Plan C becomes what Age of Ultron 3 is.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, as Doc Ock and having his own agenda, that's pretty much most of what that issue is. The Spidey-Ock trying to just basically, you know, do an end around and get one step ahead of Ultron for his own means. You know, he feels, you know, he doesn't need to work with the team. And then the change of heart at the end, he basically says, well, you know, that's why I wasn't successful, because I wasn't working with these other heroes in the Marvel Universe, so maybe we should work together as a team. So, right. You know, I'm going to actually do things the right way.
Yeah, he wasn't treating people. He was treating people as pawns, you know, like the supervillains that he was teamed up with, like in the Sinister Six, all the Sinister Six iterations.
My criticism of this is, you know, we're seeing this more often than not. Like, almost every Superior Spider-Man issue with Doc Ock, it's like he does this. He goes, oh, well, I'm superior to all of you. I'm, you know, Doc Ock in Spider-Man's body. I don't need to listen to you, miscreants. And he hatches a plan on his own. It fails. And then he's like, well, maybe I should just do this the other way. You know, maybe Peter Parker had it right all along. Like, yeah, there's a reason why Peter Parker is beating your ass all these years. You know, you might want to just maybe try to go with what works before you, you know, hatch your evil plan. You know, he is improving Spider-Man's life in some ways. But in other ways, you know, he's just, you know, he's still his own obnoxious self.
All right, well,
back to the actual main series, Age of Ultron. So we check out with the Red Hulk and Black Panther and Taskmaster in Chicago, taking on some armada of Ultron robots. And I guess this is the part where Mark in the edit was saying he had a problem with how they dealt with Black Panther, where basically I think he got killed, right?
He fell and broke his neck. Yeah. It was awful.
It was a small panel. Like, if you blinked, you missed it. Like, you basically see him fall, and you see a little crack sound effect. But, you know, you don't know that he's dead until, like, maybe a two panels over. You're like, oh, he's not moving.
Taskmaster, like, bows his head in reverence and respect. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me, Bendis. Yeah.
This goes back to, I mean, all bets are off because, you know, pretty much if Ultron has won and taken over, half the Marvel Universe is dead. You know, I mean, we're looking at pretty much, you know, this seems to be another What If or Elseworlds type of story. And what I'm very curious is to how this ties into the regular Marvel continuity. Like, you know, they'll show this at the end, I'm sure. But, you know, like, what impact will this have on the regular Marvel Universe?
What impact does any of them have? Do any of them have on the Marvel Universe? New York gets destroyed. Damage Control comes in and rebuilds it, and everything is nice and shiny next summer when it happens all over again.
Yep, and people forget that it was overrun by robots or mutants or whatever have you.
Because
New York.
People forget that Marvel has never rebooted. Marvel just has a casual continuity. So, like, if this were DC, you could think, like, oh, man, we might get, like, a new timeline out of this. But Marvel doesn't do that. So the most you could really get is the death of a D-lister, and they have their little funeral epilogue, and then they go on business as usual. There haven't been lasting effects from a crossover since, I would say, Civil War, and that doesn't even count because Cap died after it was over. Yep. So you really have to go back to, like, House of M for stuff to have really mattered.
Hey, Atlas died.
Who?
Yeah, but that's kind of why this Age of Ultron does have some intrigue to it because, you know, I think what Marvel's hinting at with this and, you know, the impact that it's having is this might be that crisis-like event. You know, like, we might find out at the end that this is Earth 16 or something, and, you know, this ends up getting merged with the 616. And, you know, we're starting to see that in, like, New Avengers and in the Avengers books, too, where you're seeing all these, like, white events and alternate universes and, you know, other Earths kind of, you know, just being introduced, you know, and they're introducing a lot of, like, new universe characters and other types of characters in there. But, you know, like, where's there going to be, like, a merging of all this, you know? So I think that's going to happen either at the end of this or it's going to tie into those Avengers books somehow.
You know why I think that can't happen? And this is me being naive, and I'm the last benefit of the doubt I can give to the comic industry is the fact that if they wanted to do this, they should have closed out Marvel then with it. Because they would honestly be squandering the last ounce of goodwill fandom has if they go and try to reboot a universe, what is it, 7 to 8 issues into the fact that they just restarted every series they have. I mean, they already catch a lot of flack that they had a 14-month Uncanny X-Men series only to cancel it and start Volume 3. So I feel like just from a business standpoint, and I mean, comics have never done the smart business thing, but the rational business idea is that would be like the last ditch effort. Like, they would have no one left except for those, like, people who, like, hate buy stuff. Like, they're buying it because they can't stop, but they don't enjoy it. Like, they would squander every last bit of goodwill that they have with the fans if they tried to do that.
I hate Marvel.
See, that's the whole reason why I'm not crazy about Age of Ultron, because I know that it was supposed to have happened like 2 years ago.
Right.
They just held off because they were like, yeah, we're going to go with Avengers versus X-Men instead.
They did Blackest Night all over again because Blackest Night was just supposed to be a Green Lantern event, and then it became like a whole universe thing. Age of Ultron was never a miniseries. It was the Hitch issues that were supposed to be an Avengers arc.
And then they were like, uh-oh, we're in this Marvel now, and this Age of Ultron isn't going to make any sense with the stuff that Brian Hitch drew. Let's get Carlos Pacheco and other dude who I can't think of right now.
Brandon Peterson.
Yeah, Brandon Peterson to do some more stuff and try to explain it away. And we have this top secret ending that only Joe Quesada can draw. That'll be spoiled by New York Post like the day before it comes out probably again.
All right, well, what do you guys think of the reveal at the end of this issue? And, you know, I don't know if you all read the books or anything, but, you know, so Luke Cage brings the She-Hulk to Ultron as a prisoner. You know, that's part of their plan. And they finally go and they see the source of Ultron, and it's none other than...
Bum, bum, bum!
The Vision. That's right, folks. Vision.
I was like, eh.
Yeah, pretty much.
I was genuinely disappointed because, you know, they've done so much to the Vision, you know, but, you know, I know that comics are cyclical and they just, you know, they do characters really, really rough, you know, every 20 years or so, you know, and I'm looking at this, I'm like, oh, man, really?
Yep.
It just seems so predictable because, I mean, they spent the last 7 years dragging Scarlet Witch through the mud, and then they're like, oh, wait, now let's mess with her ex-husband.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it makes sense. The you know, Vision is tied to Ultron. You know, that's pretty much, you know, that's pretty much canon. So, you know, you would expect he would pop up at some point. I was reading some of these going, where the hell's the Vision? You know, so he kind of answers that question. Now it begs another question. Where the hell is Hank Pym? Mm-hmm.
That's my other issue with this whole Age of Ultron supposed to have taken place during the Marvel Now. How come the hell Hank Pym hasn't been seen in a Marvel Now book yet? But he's supposed to be this big factor in Age of Ultron. Oh, yeah, but it wasn't important enough to include in your relaunch.
He is in a form of him is in Dark Avengers, and I'm trying to remember the other book he was
in. That's in an alternate universe too.
Yeah, but I think he was also in, I want to say it was Daredevil, but I'm not too sure.
Yes. Yes, yeah. He was in a recent issue of Daredevil.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, he was in last week's issue of Daredevil. Tim, like, we didn't get that in the CBC last week. He was in last week's issue of Daredevil.
Yeah, because at some point, Daredevil does approach him to ask him to help with trying to cure Foggy Nelson's cancer, which is you know, going to get progressively worse.
Right. It's actually a good issue too.
Yeah. He goes, "I'm sorry, all I do is shrink stuff.
Shrink the cancer.
Shrink the cancer.
Problem solved.
Shrink it down so the sickle cell.
He could just pee it out."
Is Chuck Austin writing this?
Oh no, not Chuck Austin.
See, I remember. Continuity from last episode. But yeah, that was Age of Ultron, big reveal, Vision. Another character I don't care about.
And when are we going to see a whole Vision? Not like Vision parts or, you know, like this is half a Vision with his like bottom torso missing, like plugged in, I guess.
Yeah, they always tear him apart though.
Yeah, or make him a chick.
Clap the robots, they get torn apart.
Yeah.
It happens.
I mean, listen, it happened like one of do you remember when they brought the heroes back, Heroes Return? Whoa. And Heroes Return with like Busiek and Perez. They had a Vision torn in half, you know, at the end of the first like three or four issues of that arc. So, you know, this isn't anything new.
Now, what have you guys checked out the Fantastic Four tie-in?
I didn't read it yet.
I did.
Yeah, Fantastic Four number 5, Age of Ultron.
I thought it was well done.
Yeah, I thought so too, but it was more. It was more of I wouldn't say the same, but you just saw pretty much the Fantastic Four doing battle and, you know, death after death. Yeah, you know, so you see how the thing goes down, and Mr. Fantastic, and you know, Johnny Storm, and all that's left is Sue Storm, and you know, she meets up with the She-Hulk like right near the end, and that kind of ties into, you know, the rest of Age of Ultron, and this is while the Fantastic Four is, you know, what is it, 600 light years away or something on the trip. that current story arc that they have, but they get a distress call that they've got to come back because of this thing with Ultron. And
I'm not really enjoying the Fantastic Four book, so that's another reason why I've kind of been putting off reading the Age of Ultron tie-in issue. I like FF, surprisingly, even though I thought that was going to be the book I was going to hate, but I'll get to it this weekend.
Yeah, this reminds me of this Fantastic Four space jaunt. Although they're always in space, it reminds me of when Josie and the Pussycats went into outer space. Because you would tune in and it would come on and you'd be like, hey, it's the regular Josie the Pussycats. No, it's Pussycats in outer space. Damn. You know? And then they have like Gleep or something with them, and like they had a different pet. You know, it was just all different. So this is kind of like, come on home.
All right. Well, I agree with Classic in the sense that, you know, it was basically a very step-by-step procedural of like how they get from point A to point B, and like 3/4 of the Fantastic Four get, you know, taken out. I thought, you know, at least in terms of there are a couple of quiet moments that I liked, and I think these are so far the best parts of Fraction writing the FF, which is the quiet moments, like the family related stuff. So, you know, for me, that's the part that were well done, you know, from my point of view.
Yeah. And real quickly to jump off topic, got a tweet from Savari89. He says, yo, Professor X dying was a big deal in AVX.
No, it wasn't. It was just cyclical. Professor X died when I first came to comics. Then he died some years later. He'll be back.
Remember he got shot?
He's still around.
And then it was Strife.
Red Skull's carrying his body around.
Yeah. He died in House of M.
We saw him 6 months in the future.
He got shot in the face right when Hope was born, and nobody even noticed.
I never understood that. They didn't make any big deal about that. He got shot in the face. How is he still alive after that?
He got he was snatched between the seconds. But nobody was like, hey, didn't he just get shot in the face? They're just like, fuck that old man. I don't care where he is.
And that was the second time he's been shot by a time traveler.
That's just his thing.
He dies. That's his deal, you know. Yeah, he's died more times than Phoenix and Jean Grey, that's for sure.
He actually has, because people forget, like, Jean has only died once. Like, she just has this reputation for dying a lot. But Jean just died once.
Jean. Not dead of Jean's. No, actually, didn't Jean die? She died at least more than once, but it was like, you know, it was like the end of one issue and then the start of another issue, she was brought back.
Those don't count. I mean event deaths. Not like, oh, she's not breathing. Oh, she was really just unconscious. Yeah. One of those things.
Oh, she wasn't like clinically dead, you know.
Right,
stuff,
right.
You know,
resuscitated, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to jump to another book now, which actually got some traction today online. And while I bring up this person's Twitter account to get prepared to read stuff from his timeline, I'm talking about Uncanny Avengers number 5, which I actually enjoyed, mostly for Oliver Coipel's art, because he's awesome.
It looked very good.
Yeah. We got a little prologue. Wait, if it comes at the beginning of the book, what do you call that?
That's the prologue.
Prologue. At the beginning, from basically showing that the Pestilence from Uncanny X-Force gave birth to Archangel's twin babies, even though he called them the babies of Apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a person off-panel sort of narrating everything, and you come to find out it's Kang the Conqueror, basically saying how he's been going back through time trying to find the time loop or something where he can stop these two kids from taking over the world and ruining his plans for the future. And he finally found the one place in time where he can do it. And then, of course, it ends. And then we get to the main story of the Uncanny Avengers team getting prepared for a news conference to talk about their Avengers Unity team with the X-Men and whatnot.
And we're introduced to three new members to the team also.
Yes, we have not Scarlet Witch, Wasp and Wonder Man, who are the PR team of the Uncanny Avengers. And Wolverine goes to Japan and recruits Sunfire, who they give no reason why he's being added to the team, just that Charles would like it. Charles always saw something. Shiro.
Does the team need an asshole? Because that's really all that Sunfire has ever brought to a comic.
That's basically, I think, why Remender wanted to write him. He wanted an asshole to write for the book.
Ugh.
That's my guess. And like when Wolverine finds him, he's all like trying to drink his pain away.
I'm all about adding an Asian brother to the comic.
Yeah, I actually don't have no problem with Sunfire. I didn't like that there was no reasoning why they were adding them.
I think Wolverine kind of pretty much stated in one of those part of his speech was that, you know, he liked his raw power, you know, which, you know, you've got Thor. I don't know why you need Sunfire too, but, you know, I guess the more the merrier in this kind of team. But, you know, I guess he feels Sunfire can also do some of the dirty work, you know, that the rest of the team probably won't be able to do. You know, like you've got so many people that are, well, this is a problem I have with Uncanny Avengers. You have a few people that are supposed to be like the face of the team, like Havoc and Captain America, but you got like a lot of people that are supposed to be like doing the dirty work. And it's like, there's no fine line between who's doing what. Like Scarlet Witch can't be in public. Rogue can't be in public because, you know, it's like who can be, you know, and if this team's supposed to be a unity team that's supposed to like give a good message of the Avengers and X-Men working together, why are you hiding so many members of the team? It's like Wolverine can be a front and center. They told him as much. You know, it's like this seems to be like Avengers plus Uncanny X-Force or something.
It's passing. It's the social construct of passing. And when you want to successfully pass, you have to get rid of your worst element.
Yeah.
So, like, if they're trying to stick with the whole message thing, they're just trying to be assimilated into society. But it sends that message that not everybody's going to make the cut.
Yeah, I think this is more just, you know, Bendis and them, you know, taking some characters that aren't doing much and then giving them something to do and saying, well, let's just add them to the roster. You know, it sells more books because you're going to say, hey, a new team member, you know, this is a milestone, which, you know, I don't think they need it. But, you know, meanwhile, Thor wasn't even in this issue.
He shows up at the press conference. That's about it.
Yeah. And, you know,
you can only make room for so many individuals to speak.
Yeah.
Oh, and so let's see. There was a press conference. And during the press conference, they, you know, announced Havoc as being the leader. Havoc gets up to the podium and gives a speech about mutants and hating the M word and wanting to not be known as a mutant, but as Alex. You know, he takes his funny looking mask off so people can see himself. And he talks about how, you know, he's Cyclops' brother and whatnot. But I guess apparently a lot of people had an issue with his speech about not being proud of the M-word, as they call it, mutant. And Rick Remender tweeted earlier today, because I guess he was getting backlash on Twitter from, you know, angry X-Men fans and whatnot. He says, heads up, if Havoc's position in UA number 5 really upset you, it's time to drown yourself, hobo piss. Seriously, do it. It's the only solution.
Oh,
wow.
Here's my take on it. You know, He's trying not to be his brother, because his brother is like the radical, you know, to me, my X-Men mutants, you know, he's got the Cyclops was right and everything. He's like, you know, he's kind of like the Malcolm X of mutants now. He's taken the position that Magneto used to have in terms of being like, you know, the ultimate mutant and trying to rally the mutants together. I guess with the trying to, you know, unite humans and mutants, Havoc's basically taking the other stance, which is, you know, don't just single us out as mutants. Like, you know, we're all people, you know, and we all, I mean, it's very lovey-dovey and, you know, kind of happy feelings.
Yeah. Can't we all just get along type of thing?
Yeah, that kind of deal. You know, I mean, he did go a little too far saying, well, don't call, you know, I hate the M-word, but, you know, you could kind of see growing up as a mutant and being, you know, and being called muty and all different kinds of slurs, you know, he's probably just like, look, you know, we're not a mutant team. We're a team of heroes together trying to do this the right way.
I read it. I read the book. I didn't even think of anything wrong with the speech. I just sort of read it and didn't think twice about it. I'm sorry. Yeah. Of course, I should have known people would get mad at something.
It comes from a place that's not really acknowledged anymore, because X-Men, when it got really popular, like early 90s, you had the cartoon. They kind of forgot where they came from as far as the late 80s, like persecution era. And that's the era when like muty and mutant would really matter. Like if you use some of that vernacular now, people wouldn't get it. But if you go back to those books, especially like early X-Factor, it was slurs back and forth. It's like, oh, you're a muty. Well, you're a flat scan. Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you're a gene joke.
Yeah, I remember.
But like they haven't used those references in like 25 years. So again, it's Marvel's selective continuity. They're basically acting like, let's just pretend it's 1989.
Yeah.
Like, don't worry about that other stuff. Let's just pretend it's been like this the whole time.
And then you got to remember, too, this is Havoc, you know, which it's kind of funny. They're showing, like, the old flashback to him and Cyclops, and he's all irresponsible, and he's not taking a stand. And, you know, Havoc's all of a sudden responsible. Like, hello, Havoc's led teams for years. He was leading X-Factor, like, 20, 30 years ago. So, I mean, it's not like this is new for Havoc, but this is showing that change. You know, kind of how far he's come. He's not just Cyclops' little brother anymore, which I think after 20 years, we should know that already.
Yeah, I think they're just trying to, you know, show that it, you know, it's one thing to lead, you know, a small, even though it's government sanctioned, you know, X Factor back then, it's another thing to lead an Avengers group. Yeah. So, you know, that's, they're just trying to show that at least there's some difference in, you know, in specialness.
I was about to read the entire monologue that he did, but it's kind of long, so I'll just let you read it yourselves in the comic, because you should pick up Uncanny Avengers number 5, because enjoyable book.
Yeah,
he also does
Absolutely
Assemble for the first time, which is pretty cool.
What was that?
He also says Avengers Assemble for the first time. Havoc does.
Yeah, gotta get that in there.
Yeah,
you have to.
Yeah.
All right, let's see, another book that we can talk about.
Tim, did you want to talk about FF5?
I haven't read it yet.
Oh, you haven't? Oh, okay.
It was good, huh?
It was good. It was good. And, you know, just to add to what you were saying before about this being, like, an enjoyable book, what do you find enjoyable about it so far?
It's fun.
Yeah. That's the best way to put it.
This, you know, ragtag team put together to watch over these kids, and the writing seems more, it seems like Fraction's having more fun writing this book than the main title.
Well, yeah, because all the quirky characters are here and all the kids are here too. And they're the ones, honestly, they're the ones I followed from the previous, you know, Future Foundation FF book. And that's the reason why I even picked this up, you know, to start, you know, I hate to say it, the kids are the ones that make me read this book.
And then the thing with the art, Allred, you know, and people don't like Allred on certain books. Like, I remember the backlash on X-Force when he took that over and it became X-Statics after a while. It actually does fit this title in terms of, you know, it is kind of campy and, you know, the old pop art and with the kids and everything. It does fit, you know, kind of the theme of the book right now.
Allred's characters don't look like they have souls. They do. There's some. It's almost like the Uncanny Valley with like CG movies. Like they look soulless. I don't like reading them. I liked X-Statics because they were weird. That kind of fit with that. But I don't like him on anything else.
Really?
Yeah.
Actually, I was the same way. I was like, I hate Allred's art. And this is actually coming from someone who actually had never read a book of Allred's.
No Madman, yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing his X-Force or X-Static stuff, and I was like, I hate this.
Yeah. I think the only thing
I was like,
yeah.
Then I was like, oh, I guess I'll give FF. Then they start doing the Marvel Now and showing the the covers for like all the different books, and they show FF, and I saw Aura was on it, and everyone looked all cartoonish, and like, man, this crap.
I hope they put that on the trade paperback. TimDog98 says this is crap.
Quote me. But after saying it was crap, I gave it a chance and read it, and I don't mind it. I'm shocked.
That goes on the second volume. Yeah. TimDog98.
Flap.
It can't go on the it can't go on the inside flap.
At eclectic on appreciation.
I think the only character that I don't like Allred's depiction of is She-Hulk. She looks like she's had better days, but he seems not to give her a flattering pose in any of his artwork.
Because he's a racist. He hates green people.
No, you know what it is? I think it's because she's probably of the four main. Of the four lead characters, she's the most traditional superhero looking.
Yeah.
You know? And I think that's probably why he's, you know, not as comfortable drawing her, you know?
He makes her look butch. I mean, she's big and muscular, but at least some people, you know, make her seem more feminine, you know?
You need Joe Maduria to draw her?
Yeah, man. I need some She-Hulk action, man. I want a nice little centerfold. Fold out or something. I don't know.
You were the one buying those Marvel swimsuit issues.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, anything else from FF you want to mention, Agent 70?
No, I didn't want to spoil anything for you, but it was a pretty enjoyable issue, so you should definitely pick it up.
Yeah. Alex Power's a little snot.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah. I like how he's aged, but other...
Where the hell is the rest of the Power Pack?
Kids. One of them was in Avengers Academy.
Right? Yeah, and Julie was with the Runaways. Or she was with one of those teams. I forget. Yeah. Oh, no, not that. She was with the Losers. And the Losers was like the squad of people who were like ashamed of their powers. It was like the Osborn guy who was a goblin. And Maddie Franklin who was hooked on the stuff.
Who's Maddie Franklin?
Spider-Girl.
Spider-Girl.
She was hooked on the MGH.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was hooked on that Barry Bonds, huh?
Yeah. No, wait. Was she hooked on the MGH, or were they using her body for MGH? Because it was like, I think they hooked her on some drug to get her under so that they can, like, harvest her body for MGH.
I don't know, man.
Did we have this thing about Maddie? Yeah, it was like, last time I was on, you were like, it was Daredevil. No, was it?
You gonna make me consult the library? The official library.
Hold on a second here. I don't have anything. I got nothing.
Next comic I want to bring up is Young Avengers.
I didn't read it.
I don't like how it looks
today.
I skimmed it.
How it looks is actually the best thing about this book.
Kieran Gillen is not a good writer for Marvel. I'm just gonna say it.
I'm glad you're on the show so you can verbally, audioly state your displeasure with Kieran Gillen.
Yeah, because I usually don't have problems with them, but this issue I actually did.
I just pulled up the cover, and I don't know if I should feel creepy about this close up. Isn't this girl underage, which is the X on her hand?
She's 18. Okay. She's just not 21.
Everyone in this book is 18. That's what they made a clear point to state in all the interviews leading up to this series launching.
So she can't drink, but you're cleared for a landing.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, good. Because I'm like staring at the star like, hey, hi-yo.
So we'll go.
Kieran Gillen they go through this thing where you get like an indie wunderkin and you think like, oh, well, people seem to like his indie stuff. We should make him like write mainstream. And it works sometimes. I mean, it worked for Fraction, but it just doesn't work for Gillen. I think Gillen was kind of too far outside the box to work within like corporate constraints. Because if you read Phonogram, it's like a quirky Vertigo-esque kind of thing, but it's not the sort of book that would make you think like, huh, this should be an Avengers book. And what do? They get that entire creative team and they make an Avengers book. But everything Gillen has done since joining Marvel has just been lackluster as hell. From Generation Hope to his really bad Uncanny arc over to this. Now, I hear he's really good on like the, what is it, Journey into Mystery, but I feel like he's got more cons than pros on his checklist.
Me and Black and Nerdy were sort of tweeting about this book earlier this morning, and I was like, why does the internet love this book so much? And I think everyone sort of looks at this as an independent book. Like, they're like, oh, like you said, it's the same creative team from whatever that Phonogram book that they worked on before. And it's like, oh, our like, if you check out McKelvey's Tumblr account and Kieran Gillen's Tumblr, I think he has a Tumblr account. Like, they post all this like sort of behind the scenes stuff on the book. Like, here's the soundtrack to the issue 2, and here, you know, this is music playing in the background of our book,
and like, that's how they did Phonogram. Like, there's actually like a playlist of what you should listen to in order for like the issues to make sense. The thing is, McKelvey is a lot like Jim Mahfood, who's a really big kind of indie guy, where his style is really great on a concert t-shirt. And it's really great for like a poster, but it's not great for sequential art. Like, I don't need 20 pages a month of him. But Prince, he'd be a great guy to be selling prints at a convention. But I don't think he is a monthly title guy.
Yeah, I would say the best parts of this book are the covers, and you know, and then some of the splash pages.
I don't mind the art in the book. I mean, the book looks nice.
Oh, yeah.
It's just, I knew I wasn't going to like this book when they were hyping it before it actually launched, because in all the interviews, they were talking about stuff like, this is about what, you know, Young Avengers, the first series, was about being a hero at 16, and now this Young Avengers series is about being a hero at 18 and all the things that come with it. And
just looking at it, it doesn't look like a book I want to read. And I mean,
nothing's happening in it so far.
Well, I have to take that stance because people are like, how can you hate something you haven't read? But like, I read the other Young Avengers stuff, and just based on the creative team they've chosen and the way the covers and the book look, it looks like they're taking that stance of like, they're reluctant heroes. It's like they're at this age where they're kind of like New York bohemian kids. Uh-oh. The Tim Dog phone's ringing.
Yeah, but you know, that's a good point. This seems to be marketed, or at least it seems to be like pointed towards, you know, kids that would be in that age range right now. You know, like the 18 to 20 somethings that are like, you know, the skinny jeans crowd, and you know that the kids that like that would be like in college now if they graduated from Glee or whatever, that kind of crowd.
But it's a skewed brand because they already generally had that going with the Runaways.
Yeah.
Like, it really kind of bothers me that they would take the Young Avengers and then kind of make them reluctant heroes, or like the heroes who are too cool to be heroes when they demanded to be the Young Avengers. If you want to just be like lackadaisical or be like, hey, I didn't ask for this life, that's when you go hang with the Runaways.
Yeah.
I think they're just cashing in on the Avengers brand because of the movie.
Yeah. And this is the only young title out because everyone else is getting killed in Avengers Arena right now.
And then they'll wake up.
Yeah. Like Lost. Then they'll all find out they were in purgatory.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoiler.
It's funny. I've been reading it, but I haven't really been enjoying it. But I actually, this issue 3, I actually enjoyed the most, which isn't really saying much because still not too much really happened in it.
A lot more action than the other issues, you know, and, you know, that whole thing with the mob freaking out and melting faces and shit, you know, I mean, we get a little bit of that here, but we actually get some real action with some actual villains in this one.
Yeah.
And that's from what I glimpsed.
Stuff happens. Adam Black wants to join in, so I'm going to see if this works.
The Adam Black.
He'll be minus camera.
All right.
We'll see. But while we wait for him and wait for Agent 70 to come back, we can find another Another book. Let's see.
I think it's time we talked about Batman. I don't know if you got a chance to check that.
I did read Batman Incorporated, number 9, before the show. Oh, one other thing. Black and Nerdy says, Miss America is about 16 in The Vengeance. I'm assuming The Vengeance was some other series or something she was in.
Okay. The but, series before this one.
Yeah, Black Batman Inc. number 9. They buried Damien. The end.
They did. That's pretty much what it boils down to. Now, they intercut scenes of the funeral and the burial with, Bruce Wayne fighting against Leviathan. And, being that this is a Batman Incorporated book, we not only see, the direct fight, but also the impact across the Batman Inc. Group. So to speak, like all the different people in the different countries in Batman Inc. But, Leviathan, Bruce gets his licks in, Nightwing comes in, tries to help out, and then we start to see some reaction. What wasn't, and then like Leviathan gets kind of brought down finally, not brought down, but like the fight, the battle ends with Red Robin. Yum. Who comes in with a tank and like just blows him away. I have to do the Red Robin thing.
Red Robin.
So Ruby Tuesday comes in with a tank and blows away Leviathan, and that kind of ends the battle, but the war is still on because Leviathan's still alive, and so the team makes off, and all this again is interlaced with the actual burial of Robin and Batman ain't trying to figure out what to do. Because now they're officially unsanctioned, which makes no sense either. They have the press conference, announcing that these acts of terrorism and stuff, that because of Leviathan and their acts, that Batman Incorporated is really a threat and they should not be sanctioned anymore. And Bruce Wayne has to make himself available to the authorities. And, basically... shit goes from bad to worse, which, if that's possible, because, the worst has already happened. Robin's dead. But we are going to see in the next issue, and this is the teaser, that Bruce will get his revenge. I guess the big question is Batman going to actually kill this time? Because, now he's got a son that's dead.
Nope. If he didn't kill the Joker, he ain't killing this guy.
Right.
And that's why, there's nowhere to take this. They kind of painted themselves into a corner. And I always think about the other side of things. I don't even care about Batman and Damian and all that. I want to know, what do the Wayne stockholders think? Where it's like, okay, all of a sudden, the CEO and everything comes out like, oh, yeah, this 10-year-old, that's my kid. I banged this gypsy a couple years ago. And then they have to get used to that. They're like, oh, okay. And then next stockholder meeting, they're like, so, Mr. Wayne, where's Damien? It's like, camping trip?
Yes. He's away at boarding school.
He's away. Don't worry about him. it's those things that secret identities don't really help that I'm always curious about. Like, how do you explain to just the authorities, oh yeah, this kid died on my watch? Because somebody's gonna want to know.
Yeah. Well, was he even schooled? I mean, wasn't he homeschooled? Or yeah, actually, I don't know how to explain Damien being in the home without any kind of schooling. Did they actually have a homeschool curriculum for him, or did they just not report his existence?
He's a rich white man. They got everything they want for him. Yeah, the thing is, though, there's still got to be some paperwork, especially in this day and age. Because I don't think he's even an American citizen.
No. Yeah, but I mean, what it boils down to is, even in one panel, which I thought this should have been covered in more detail, Talia tells Leviathan, I didn't authorize you to kill Damien. And he just said, look, I had a shot and I took it. And that's what I do. And it's just weird that Robin's getting killed by an older clone of himself.
I read it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know these Squire and Knight and all these other Batman Inc. characters and Bat-Cow and Chris Burnham's art's kind of weird.
Yeah, I'm not a fan at all, but I also wasn't a Quitely fan. I always describe Quitely's art as they all look like they've been in the tub too long. They just look wrinkled, but like Burnham doesn't work on me. But to the quick thing is basically think about like every country has its own Batman. So Knight and Squire is like UK Batman. Then there's like Bat Ombre or whatever. And then there's like Batwing, which is Africa Batman.
Yeah.
And
they're replacing, by the way.
Yeah, they're changing him.
What?
I guess news we forgot to mention. They're going to bring in a new creative team on Batwing, and they're going to replace him with a new it's a new character who, I guess, people already know this person, but they're keeping it a secret.
Something tells me that he's not going to be an African.
Hell no. They're turning Batwing into a globe-trotting character. There's a Jim Palmiotti and somebody else.
Oh, Jimmy. Okay. I haven't read it since when it stopped. I've been buying it, but I haven't caught up because I actually liked it, but I had a running bit to see how long it would take for Winnick to shove AIDS into it because that's his thing.
It is in Africa. So.
It is. Because ever since Pedro, he's like Captain AIDS Awareness. So I was like, let's see how long. It took 7 issues.
Oh, so he really did add AIDS.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it's Africa, and it's Winnick. Yeah, it's like,
Did he write Green Lantern?
No, he wrote Green Arrow.
Green Arrow and Batman for a while, too, when the Red Hood resurfaced.
And he did Exiles. But he commonly, when he wrote Green Arrow, he gave HIV to Speedy. And then when he did Exiles, he gave a mystery disease to Thunderbird. We don't know what it was, but he couldn't leave that world.
What happened to giving Speedy AIDS? Nothing?
Well,
they retconned that?
I think she had HIV. She never got full blown. And then I guess Flashpoint has Magic Johnson HIV curing properties.
There you go.
Adam Black, are you there?
All right. Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, Adam Black, how you doing, bro?
All right, man. How y'all doing?
Pretty good.
You want to chime in on anything we've talked about?
I haven't had the chance to read a whole bunch except Age of Ultron, and, it was pretty good.
No. What'd you think of the reveal at the end of Age of Ultron?
I was surprised. I was surprised about it. I was
Were you
Vision?
Really?
Okay, what the? I wasn't expecting it, but hasn't Vision been shown in Marvel Now in that annual or whatever?
Yeah, he's in Avengers Assemble annual.
Yeah.
Number one. And he's back with the Avengers, and then he finally started to ask some questions like, hey, how come when I was killed and disassembled, y'all never tried to repair me and bring me back? What's up with that?
Because you're nothing but trouble, and you bring Ultron with you all the goddamn
And they're
time.
Like, we were kind of busy with Skrulls and sieges and...
Yeah.
But didn't he become a kid? Like, was that not the same Ultron? Because they, reassembled him or whatever, and he joined the Young Avengers.
He was Young Vision, yeah.
And he still...
For Kate Bishop, right?
Yeah, and he still had, Vision's memories and stuff. He was just Teen Vision.
Wasn't he in also Mighty Avengers? Or was that just Jocasta I'm thinking about?
I know... Jocasta was. I feel like he was in Mighty Avengers because he sucked. Because Mighty Avengers was nothing but people who suck.
Yeah, it was Hercules and Hank Pym as the Wasp.
Harold Danvers and Wonder Man.
Amadeus Cho, wasn't he in that?
Yeah, it was people who sucked because all the cool ones were in New Avengers.
Yeah,
and New Avengers actually weren't established Avengers.
They called themselves Avengers because Cap gave them that title before he died, and they were like, "We're doing this for Cap."
Yeah, we're on the run.
Yeah, they weren't sanctioned. Avengers.
Let's hide out Doctor Strange's house.
Yeah, that's the house that no one could see or whatever, right? What was that?
Yeah, they were like cloaked. No one could see it. That shit wasn't worth it, though. I would have just been like, let me sign the papers.
Yeah.
Like, just let me sign. I want a shower. I want a hot meal. Just show me the contract.
Yeah, I never understood Spider-Man sticking with them because, you know, really he was already registered. And his identity was well known until the retcon, but you know that's another story.
So I wonder if we'll see Jocasta in Age of Ultron. Sometimes they've forgotten about her.
I hope we don't, because she's like, when you get to Jocasta, you're really digging in the toy box, and that's what I hate about Avengers. There was this like 10-year period where like old school fans hated it because it was nothing but the people you see on lunchboxes. It was like all these people who shouldn't have been Avengers, but they were popular. So it's like, okay, we'll put them in Avengers, which is good. But then like now, since they've got all these teams and there's so many potential Avengers, it's starting to become the Avengers of the late 90s. When, like, even Captain America wouldn't waste his time with them. It would be, like, U.S. Agent and Triathlon and all the, like, it's going to become a filler team. It's the same way Justice League is headed right now when they had that, like, cocktail party. This is where you get to the part of the roster where it's, like, Vixen and Hero of the Day, and they aren't really special anymore.
And then they'll have to reboot the franchise and get back to the originals, and then eventually they'll expand it out again and then take it back, and this cycle goes on and on.
Except comics will be $5.99 each by that point.
Yeah. I still won't get my Gilgamesh one shot, but, you know, whatever.
I just had a question, a good topic to bring up, and I lost it already.
I read somewhere online that it was, what if Age of Ultron is really just a bad dream because Squirrel Girl had some shrimp that went bad and she's got a reaction to it. And she wakes up at the end and, like, having this like big bad dream.
I saw that. I think someone asked Tom Brevoort that in his I think Empress Geek retweeted that.
Yeah.
I remember what I was going to bring up.
At that point, they got all that money, so Marvel just says, "I got you, bitch," and then that's it.
Yeah. I remember what I was going to say now. Earlier today, Eric Lawson had tweeted a question about why hasn't Marvel and DC created a successful new character in like the last 20 years?
Why hasn't he? Like, Savage Dragon's the last. Like, Eric Larson always loves to talk shit, but like, that dude has one main character to his name that looks like shit, that really seems like a police ripoff of the Ninja Turtles, like if you really look at it in a wide lens. He loves to start shit, but it's like, where's your new character?
He
can list all the Savage Dragon universe characters he's created.
Don't nobody read Savage Dragon. That's fancy toilet paper.
Damn.
Shops only order that for subscribers. They don't even order shelf copies anymore.
Yeah.
I actually read Savage Dragon something recently. Yeah, 180 something.
Let me guess, you were in the bathroom.
Yeah. No. I'm always surprised that Savage Dragon is still in publication because, you know, it's like Spawn, you know, you're like, they still make that?
Well, it's Image. I mean, as long as you're willing to like foot the bill, you can pretty much publish anything you want. You're just not getting paid for it.
Yeah. Meanwhile, I can't get a new issue of Usagi Yojimbo, but, you know, Stan Sakai's taking a break, so. I'd rather that than Savage Dragon.
So let's pretend that it wasn't Eric Larson that actually asked this question.
Better than me.
Let's pretend it was Rob Liefeld.
Well, I think people are being really, they have a narrow definition when they say stuff like that, because there are examples. People want a new Superman, which is dumb because that was like a 70-year process, you know? Like, there have been success stories, though. You just have to narrow your sights. The Sentry, take it or leave it, he was an important character, even if they shoved him down our throats. Runaways was a successful launch. They're constantly in limbo, but I mean, they were probably one of the biggest successes of like the last 15 years for Marvel. It's just that they won't let just anybody handle them. So, I mean, if you look around, these things do exist. I mean, you could even go as far to say, like, Damien. Damien was loathed when he came out, but people were genuinely, like, sad to see him die. And, I mean, even in a short period, he wove himself into that mythos. So success is relative, but I think there are enough like, here's a good example. Maria Hill. Maria Hill didn't exist like 10 years ago. But I mean, now she's basically the most important person in the Marvel Universe. You got to kind of be, you got to temper your expectations. You're not going to have another out of the box Superman. Yeah. You're just not. That grows over time. And there's really not a lot you can do in that realm. But there are examples of successful concepts without being rehashed.
Yeah, I thought one successful, you know, character that was introduced was it almost over 10 years ago was Jessica Jones in Alias.
Exactly,
and that took off to the point now where she is, you know, kind of an ancillary, you know, sort of an auxiliary character. You hardly if ever hear of her, you know. But I mean, for a while she was like the best thing going in the Marvel Universe. You know, partially because she's a Bendis character and Bendis ran everything, but. All the same, Deadpool is not recent enough. I mean, I think that kind of passes that 20-year mark. But, you know, he's a character he's probably the last major hit character, you know, that still has his own sustainable book, you know, introduced, you know, in Marvel Universe.
I was going to say, what's his name? Alpha possibly could be a character if we depends how.
Verdict's still out on that.
Yeah, and you know he went from being forced down our throats. Now he's decent and you know readable, although the art's terrible. You know I think in the face of Superior Spider-Man and all the stuff that's going on with Peter Parker, it's like a refreshing change of pace. Like, hey, this is kind of what Spider-Man used to be. So let's just read Alpha.
Right.
You know, that's kind of what what we're left with.
I think the reason it also seems that way is there are a lot of characters they shove down our throats where you know, like, to quote Mean Girls, they're trying to make fetch happen. Like, there are a couple of, like, characters where it's like, you know, they want them to be big and they just won't take. Like, Echo. Echo, when they introduced her in Daredevil, and then she went on to become Ronin, and then she would kind of be like the new Avengers sleeper agent. Like, they really wanted her to happen. Or Spider-Woman. Bendis has tried and failed so many times over the past 10 years to make Spider-Woman happen, and she just won't unless she's part of a team. So there's more of those glaring failures, which makes it look bad, but if you kind of like change how you're looking at things, you can still see some success stories.
Okay.
What about the Hood as a villain in the Avengers books by Bendis? That was one that was shoved down our throats.
Well, the Hood's kind of different because the Hood was actually created by Brian K. Vaughan back when they first launched the Max series. So he created that around the time he did Runaways. And that was an awesome concept. I will agree that it didn't quite... I understood why they used him in New Avengers, but he didn't have the juice for that. Like, mainly, like, he saw the power vacuum. New York needed a new kingpin, and I think they realized he was on the shelf, but he just wasn't the right guy for that job. They changed too much about him. So, yeah, they were trying to force that a little bit.
All right, let's jump to Image. Anyone read Jonathan Hickman's East of West?
Yeah, I read it.
I read it, too.
It was very different, I'll say that.
Yeah.
Very different. I'm still trying to figure out what the fuck is going on, but
the art was nice.
Yeah.
If I can find the dude's Twitter handle real quick.
Did they work together on FF?
I'm not sure.
Is this your typical Hickman book where it's like doing homework where there's like 8,000 diagrams?
No.
His shit tires me out. I look at him like, I ain't got time for this.
It's something about the four horsemen of the apocalypse. There's four characters and they're like the four horsemen, and I don't know, it's kind of weird. It's some of those like weird books that I usually don't understand.
Yeah, and it has a lot to do with history being reimagined and that type of thing. Like the Civil War turned out totally different and that type of thing. And then it's like, okay, then you have these weird three kids and I'm like, what's this about? And then the cool guy in the white suit or whatever, he turns out to be Death, and I'm still like, what the fuck is this about? And I don't know. This is crazy.
I mean, it was the first issue, so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, you know, with him, give him three or four issues, and then you may be able to follow along.
I think it's only like a 5-issue series, so.
Fuck.
Yeah, it's a limited series. And let's see.
Okay. I thought that was ongoing.
Nah. Nothing with Image is ongoing, as I think we said on here.
So for that super hit Savage Dragon.
Black and Nerdy says, Bendis tends to retool characters to fit his story. The Hood is one example, and Novar is another.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, Marvel Boy.
Yeah, his Novar makes no sense.
I know Black and Nerdy is a fan of Novar. I think shares your sentiment as how Bendis used him. But
yeah. Oh, and Bendis hoard the hell out of Ares. Remember that?
I like Ares.
Ares was just mad. He was mad Thor.
Yeah. Like
Thor with an edge.
You're saying like Sunfire is an asshole. That was Ares.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mad asshole Greek.
Why is no one trying to bring Ares back to life? Like, every time Thor dies, it's like, oh shit, let's go to Ragnarok. But, like, nobody's trying to bring Ares back to life.
I want Ares back. I had mentioned that a while ago. I like Ares. He needs to be utilized somehow.
That's like, is Hercules anywhere in Marvel now?
Mm-mm. I was just asking that, too. Yeah, I was like, where the hell's Hercules?
Yeah, there's a bunch of characters off the board. Like Moon Knight, and all of a sudden, now we're supposed to care about him in Age of Ultron because this was written 2 years ago, back when Moon Knight had a freaking book.
Moon Knight's last book was good, but he's another one of those characters where they're trying to make Fetch happen because he had like two failed series in a 3-year span of time.
Yeah, didn't they make
him,
like,
the last one was written? Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I was going to say, didn't they give him multiple personalities and like off the deep end?
Well, yeah. He always had multiple personalities, but this was the first time he had personalities of other Avengers. So, like, that's what, like, at first he thought.
A new hook.
He thought he was teaming up with, like, Cap and Wolverine and Spider-Man, but it turned out they were all just in his head. So he had, like, his own claws built and, like, his own shield and stuff like that. But it's a good story if you buy it in trade, because it's kind of off in its own little world.
And Adam Black, I think you were going to say what?
I was going to say, would y'all consider that the one failure of Bendis during that Avenger period or whatever that he was on? Because that last series he wrote, and it failed.
He's had a couple of those, though, and they always spin it. Like, Spider-Woman failed. Yeah. And Spider-Woman was the same creative team. Like, he loves working with Alex Maleev. So,
because that Spider-Woman was what became that motion comic, wasn't it? And they put it on, they have it on Netflix now, the Spider-Woman.
It only lasted 7 issues. And, I mean, it was supposed to tie into that whole, like, cosmic world that didn't take off, because then she was taking orders from S.W.O.R.D., because S.W.O.R.D. is Space Shield, but we don't really see S.W.O.R.D. that much, especially now that everything has happened. Because, like, we didn't really see S.W.O.R.D. much after Hammer. And I was wondering if they ended up being a part of that or what. It seems like they take their orders from different people. But, yeah, that was another Bendis failure. He doesn't always hit them out of the park. They just sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, everyone can't bat 100. 100%.
Stan Lee did.
So we have nothing bad to say about Jim Lee, huh?
Wow, not Jim.
Nah, Stan was the man. Jim's just a team player.
Yeah.
Adam Black.
Mm-hmm.
When I was going through our comic book stash, I found the issue of Moon Knight where he died back when Stephen Platt was drawing him.
Oh, yeah. Stephen Platt was supposed to be the next Todd McFarlane. Wonder what happened with that. But, I mean, yeah, that, wow, you brought back memories with that issue.
Yeah, I flipped through it. The art was, I guess, really pretty.
Stephen Platt went over to Image, and I think he did Prophet, but yeah. Prophet was never a breakout hit. That was one of those, that was the period of time where, like, everybody was going to be a millionaire if they went over to Image, but, like, most of their stuff failed because it didn't come out on time. Like, Wentworth's took forever to come out.
Who drew Wentworth's? That was Wiles Potassio.
That was Wiles, yeah.
Welcome back to me, by the way. But, yeah, Wentworth's was a good book. It just didn't come out on time.
I saw Wiles down in MegaCon.
I feel bad for him because he's like the Pete Best of the Image group, where like he was there in the beginning, but he got none of the credit and none of the money because like he was constantly late.
Oh, because that's his own fault.
And now he's like trying to, well, apparently like his sister got sick and a bunch of stuff. So he's trying to like rebuild his career now while those other guys are just scratching their balls and counting their money.
And stuff happens.
Yeah, I always felt bad for him.
Because he got sick. I want to say he got, like, lupus or something, but now I'm just spreading rumors. Like, something happened.
Something happened.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see. Are there any other DC books you want to discuss?
I was about to say, is that what I missed? I missed the DC books? Because that's what I didn't read this week.
We only got it to Batman Incorporated. Aquaman is rolling on with number 18. I actually made a point to read that. This is, you know, after the fallout of Throne of Atlantis, where pretty much Atlantis attacked and submerged Gotham City and Boston and, like, you know, caused countless thousands of deaths, you know, casualties. Aquaman ends up ascending to the throne because his brother was the king. But Aquaman takes over and finds out that his long trusted advisor, Volko, who's on the surface, was the guy behind the attacks or behind prompting Atlantis to attack. So this is kind of an issue starting like a new arc after Throne of Atlantis. Aquaman is king. And basically what they're doing, Atlantis is now, is they're trying to rehabilitate their image with the surface, which is tough because, you know, Atlantis just killed a bunch of people. And they're trying to recover all these Atlantean weapons that are being used by humans on the surface. And so he has to go to Volko, who's imprisoned, and ask him where he can find these weapons. So that moves along. And then right at the end, his wife Mara gets attacked by one of the former kings of Atlantis who looks like he's dead, you know, like he was brought back from the dead. You know, I don't know if this is Poseidon or one of the other previous kings of Atlantis, but he's looking to reclaim his throne. And that's going to go. Basically, this arc is now called Death of the King, Part 1. So I don't know if this is going to be Death of the King of Atlantis, which is now Aquaman, or if this is going to be like one of the deaths of the previous kings. But Jeff Johns is doing the writing, and you know, Paul Pelletier on pencils is a, you know, it's a good read if you're into Aquaman, which I am.
Paul Pelletier, he was like the go-to guy for Cable or something. That's not a marquee guy. That's a we just need this book out guy.
Hey, I actually like his art because I start going back and reading Guardians of the Galaxy that he drew with.
So he's a solid artist.
Most of this is underwater. So, you know, it's kind of like drawing out in outer space. You know, there's a certain element to it that you have to have, which really includes, you know, bubbles and distortion. But, you know, I think he covers it pretty well.
Speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy, that came out this week. How did I not think of that?
How, Tim? How?
Probably because nothing happened in that book. I like this, so I get to rant.
That's your Chronicles, man.
Yeah, the ranting Chronicles. So yes, Guardians of the Galaxy, the other big Marvel cosmic book, came out this week. And who all read it?
I read it.
Adam Black, you read it?
No, I haven't read it yet.
I skimmed it. I can't even qualify as reading it.
I read it. It's actually pretty good.
No.
You didn't like it? You beg to differ.
I beg to differ. That was the only book I had time to review this week.
No kidding.
I'm trying to get better at that. What did I not like about it? I complained about something. Let me bring up my post.
TheClickNation.com.
Yes, TheClickNation.com. And also, people out there watching live, if you have comments, make sure to tweet them to me or put them in the thread of the Google Plus event. But let's see. Had one quick comment from Black and Nerdy again. He said, Ares was better in that miniseries. Bendis tweaked him in Sentry. Let's see. Yeah, Guardians of the Galaxy review. I know one thing I didn't like was like when Tony Stark was introduced, he's like, he's in space and he's flying around. He's like, oh, I'm so nice and free here in space. I love it up here, away from the 10 different Avengers teams I'm on. But he's on another team now.
Yeah. We had to have read the 0.5 book, Guardians of the Galaxy, because that explains how Tony Stark is there. Iron Man is on the team in the first place, right?
No, because at the end of that, they just like he's
just there.
Peter Quill's telling him his life story, and they're like, "Oh, cool, let's drink."
Yeah.
Mark my words. The main reason Iron Man is on this team is so Tony Stark can bang a green chick.
And that's happening in Iron Man. Actually,
that Captain Kirk.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's happening in Iron Man, written by Kieran Gillen now.
So if he's done that already, you know, what's the point?
He tried to, but then she wanted to mate with him in his Iron Man suit. And once he took his helmet off, she screamed and kicked him out. Yeah.
That's why you got to do it like Batman. He kept his cowl on when he made Damian.
Yeah. Well, isn't he trying to understand celestial forces? Because this whole thing with the Phoenix had kind of stumped him, you know, breaking the Phoenix Force up and, you know, and trying to deal with the Phoenix Force. You know, isn't this like his, like, kind of sowing his space oats a little bit? I mean, other than banging chicks, you know, he's really trying to, you know, this is like him being more fascinated with space.
I guess.
I think this is just him being a bored rich guy, and he has the luxury of going to space.
This is what they do, right?
I don't think it's much deeper than that, really.
Okay, so he's not trying to be like Reed Richards.
I think that was probably where it came from, but...
Yeah. More like Lance Bass.
In space. Oh,
damn.
Everybody forgot about that.
Yeah. Did he come back to space, or is he still there?
He never got to go.
Oh, jeez.
He went through all the training, and then they, like, I think they lost their funding.
We should have a comic about that.
I'd be the only one to buy it.
Space Bass.
As he tries to bang green dudes. I was in a boy band and I never sang.
So, let's see. I ain't like that in Guardians of the Galaxy. And... Oh, yeah, I don't like the new uniforms. I said Peter Quill's helmet looks like he's playing safety for the Michigan Wolverines.
Yeah. I could definitely say that I'm not happy with, like, how they've kind of brought Peter Quill back from the Cancerverse and the whole ending of, you know, like, the Abnett and Lanning stuff. So, you know, it's one issue, but, you know, I'd like to give it another shot.
That was my question about all of this, where I understand this isn't the Guardians of the Galaxy from, like, the Marvel Universe Series 3 trading cards with, like, the guy who had Cap's shield, and then there's that other guy whose name's, like, Ernie or some Yondu. Shit, I don't know.
Yes.
Yeah, that's like, violent. That was the Guardians of the Galaxy.
Charlie 27.
Yeah. But then, like, there was the whole like DNA stuff where like, is that important? Are they retconning anything that happened during the Annihilation cosmic stuff, or did any of these characters acknowledge that then?
Like, his dad shows up, whoever, the King of Spartats, and they're talking, and he's like, oh, I heard you survived your experience at the Cancerverse. And that's about all you hear about that. Yeah.
But also, I mean, that stuff counts because, you know, that's how Groot and Rocket Raccoon and Gamora and Quill all come together anyway.
Okay.
So that's where this particular group comes from. So the Abnett Landing stuff, you know, is... I hate to use the word canon, but that's what they're working off of to start here.
Okay.
I guarantee that they will bring Richard Rider back, but then he'll be a villain for the new Nova, and they'll piss off fanboys.
I hope not. Yes.
Yet again.
Well, he wouldn't necessarily even have to be a villain. Wouldn't he just be like a competitive rival? Because you get that from the point five of there's the gold domes and there's the black domes. And it seems like they're almost like a rival cast, but they're all still like Nova Corps members. It's just kind of like one doesn't. It's like Army and Navy, you know, like they're all armed forces, but they don't necessarily like each other. So I think it's one of those things. Like, they may fight over who gets to actually be the defender of Earth, but I don't think Ryder will necessarily be a villain. It'll just be like a war of the caste system.
Nah, I think they'll bring him back as full-on villain just to piss off all the people who are mad at Sam Alexander. They want to make Sam Alexander all this focal new Peter Parker. So to do that, they can bring him in to be his Venom or something.
Does anyone really care about Richard Rider? Like, aren't those people almost dead? Like,
whoa, I care.
Once again.
I'd like to think he's still alive.
It's the Rip Van Winkle effect on comic book readers, where you're going to have a lot of readers that haven't read comics in a while, and they're going to be like, hey, Nova! And they're going to pick it up and go, where the fuck's Richard Rider? You know, where's the Nova that I grew up with the New Warriors? And they want an explanation as to what happened to him. So that's the silent, you know, or the vocal minority that's going to be up in arms about the whereabouts of Richard Rider. But once they reveal where he is, it's going to be like, oh, okay, well, good.
Is anyone who grew up reading the New Warriors coming back to comics, like, wouldn't that permanently scar you to where you just be like, you'd be like, fuck that noise. I don't like.
They caused the Civil War. And
yeah, they checked out around Civil War.
Villain and some other news. I need to start jotting this stuff down. They had the Marvel Next Big Thing live blog Monday, which they haven't done in a while, to announce the new creative team coming on Nova in July, Nova 6. It's going to be Zeb Wells and Paco Medina.
And that bothers me because, like, I feel like they do that stuff for retailers, but I kind of wanted, Jeff Loeb to be around a bit longer.
They explain why they're doing it, because Loeb has his duties as over Marvel TV, which is ruining.
Yeah, he's got to go and come up with new shows to replace Hulk Agents of Smash, which is getting canceled.
Yeah.
Well, Paco Medina's not bad. Like, I would like his art on there, but I'm not sure who's right. I don't know if I like Zeb Wells.
I haven't read enough of his stuff, so I don't have an opinion on him.
Zeb Wells is an interesting dude. He won a talent competition at, like, a Wizard World, and when he did that, Quesada gave him a job. So he kind of does, like, stuff on the outskirts. He's known for doing, like, really fun, zany stories, like, in those Spider-Man books that don't really count, but like, he doesn't have enough of an ongoing track record for me to necessarily be excited. Like, he'll probably make it a fun book, but I don't know, it seems like it's building to something and he's not really an architect.
Zeb Wells is taking over Savage Wolverine when Frank Cho's done sometime this year. Him and Joe Madureira are gonna be on the art team. Or the creative team on Savage Wolverine.
Right, they were the Avenging Spider-Man opening arc team.
Yeah. Just what we need is another whimsical Wolverine title.
Well, you got two of them.
I actually like Savage Wolverine.
Savage Wolverine is good. That Wolverine title is bleh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Paul Cornell Wolverine, you know, with Alan Davis. Alan Davis is doing his best to save that book, but right now, I got to see what the second issue does.
I'm not crazy about Alan Davis's art.
Yeah, I don't like Alan Davis either.
I mean, really? It's fine. It his art is plain to me.
Alan Davis and Mark Farmer, like, they've been a team for like 20 years, and I've never liked it, all the way back to like Gen 13 bootleg. Like, they have a classic style, but they don't wow you like more recent artists have.
Oh, I disagree with that. I mean, he's been doing stuff since, I mean, like Excalibur, and even before that, going back to, you know, Marvel Man, you know, Miracle Man.
Oh, I know. UK. I hated that too. I'm familiar.
Let's see. Brandon Murphy has a comment. He says,
Brandon Murphy.
This is going back to Nova. He says, they acknowledged it, but never explained the original Nova. Not sure what that's in reference to. And then he also says, wait, where's it? Oh, it hurts to see what they did with the New Warriors. I agree.
Yeah.
And let's see, some Twitter stuff flew in through here while we were talking.
Which New Warriors? The ones they blew up or the other team?
I'm assuming he means one they blew up.
Because then there was that like Jubilee team that made no sense whatsoever.
I hate it.
Did Paco Medina draw that?
I feel like
who drew that?
I think he may have.
Because I remember liking the art. That's the only thing I
didn't start noticing him until that first Deadpool arc. But like, yeah, I think he may have done that.
What's his name? Black and Nerdy says, do the old fans still care about Joe Mad? It took like 5 years for Battle Chasers 7 to come out.
It's true. I don't really think, if you were new to comics, I don't think you're really going to lust over Joe Mad like the people who've been reading 20 years. It's the same with J. Scott Campbell. J. Scott Campbell just draws two different people and changes the hair color. He's not that great, but we remember him from this heyday. Like, Joe Mad, I don't think he brings all the boys to the yard.
Yeah, he's no John Cassidy.
No.
Everyone else freaking
John Cassidy's over. Art just looks old and tired now. It's like if he drew the Reader's Digest. Like, his characters have no wow or action whatsoever.
But his stuff, same with Brian Hitch to me.
Hitch is another one of those where, like, he's uber detailed, and we've seen he can do action. I never really felt Cassidy was even good on Astonishing X-Men. Like, he brought a new look to the X-Men, but he didn't do action that well.
I still think Hitch can bring it. It's just, I think Hitch gets the whole tag because he was late on the Ultimate books.
No, because he was late on everything. Like,
on people that are late last week, and we can rant on them again this week.
Hitch and Jim Lee have to have a lead. That's like, they've gotten to the point they won't announce Jim Lee stuff until they know, like, this whole Superman book, he's been working on that forever. But they have to make sure he's got enough lead time.
Yeah, as soon as he got off JLA. Or Justice League, I mean.
Yeah. So.
Superman Unchained. Worst title ever.
He just travels the world calling everyone the N-word.
Oh, damn.
The K word.
I like the way you fly, boy. speaking of Image, Tim, I did get a chance to read Five Weapons. I think you'd covered that in a previous comic chronicles, but Five Weapons number 2, I actually liked it.
I liked it. I'm digging that. Probably one of my favorite, my pick of the week if I did those type of things.
I feel like Danny's the only one who didn't like it. I feel like I remember her saying, like, she was kind of griping over it.
Yeah, she didn't like the accent they gave the black kid. He was talking all like,
Oh, you mean the Rastafarian dreadlocks kid?
Yeah.
Rick the Stick?
He was talking, you know, his word balloons were in the manner of how, like, a slang. He was using a lot of slang. And she didn't like it.
Yeah,
looks fun to me, though.
For a while, I mean, if not for the, you know, for the taftan and the dreadlocks, I would think he was, like, French or Creole. Like, you know, it's not clear if he's a Rasta or if he's just, like, you know, just some guy with, like, an accent.
And
he could be Jamaican. He's Jamaican.
Brandon Murphy decided not to use the comment section, and he's just Google Talk messaging me. What y'all laughing at?
Yeah. Laughing at you.
The disobedience of Brandon Murphy. How dare you, sir?
But his thread, he's typing me here.
We love Brandon Murphy. Yeah, I miss that guy.
He says they vaguely explain Thanos and Quill escaping the Cancerverse, but never explain why Richard Rider isn't saved with them. Correct. I like the Speedball, Namora, New Warriors, and it sucks to see them just put them down. Scott Jimenez mentioned to the Marvel 616 guys about the Cosmic Marvel issues. Okay. Yeah. And Black and Nerdy says, same could be said about Jim Lee. All of his people are chiseled and good-looking.
Oh, I'll agree with Jim Lee. Like, he really doesn't have multiple body styles. That's why, if you notice, I don't know if you read a lot of
artists, though.
Some people can differentiate. Like, with Jim, here's a big example of Jim Lee. If you go back and you read Hush, the Batman story, look at how he draws Commissioner Gordon. Then go read his Four Tomorrow Superman arc, and look how he draws Mr. Orr. They're the same exact character.
Yeah, you can put the Hush series and all of his X-Men books side by side, and you know, just
not much has changed.
Yeah. You know, the men look the same, the women look the same. It's just different costumes. Yeah, that's just his. That's just the way he does it. You know.
But that was Guardians of the Galaxy. Oh yeah, I guess we said at least the main opening arc is the Earth, this Imperial Council, this Galactic Council got together and decided the Earth is off limits. No one can attack it or go on it or basically just leave it alone, which of course makes Earth a target. So now the Guardians have to defend it.
All right, my favorite part of this is the King of Spartax being the King of the Galaxy. I'm like, where's this guy been for every other cosmic
Who's heard
event?
Of Spartax?
You know? Like, what?
All I know in Marvel Cosmic is Shi'ar, Kree, and Skrull.
Right, well, then there's the Badoon, but all they're ever good for is invading.
I ain't heard of them.
Oh, no, they're old school. They're definitely old school.
And then the Brood.
Yes, there's the Brood.
And they showed the picture of the Galactic Council gathered together. They had a Brood representative.
I hate how they're, like, making them all civilized now. It's basically like how Star Trek treated Klingons. It's like, they're these subhuman things forever. And then suddenly it's like, oh, they can speak, and we're going to let them in our schools.
Yeah. And impregnate Kitty Pryde and, you know, other kinds of good stuff.
Oh, does that happen?
Oh, yeah. She delivered the baby already, didn't she? The Broodling?
I gave up X-Men after Marvel now started. I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah. Now she's just the headmistress of the Jean Grey school.
Headmistress is right. Mistress given.
Brandon Murphy also says, it only took a Galactic Council how long in the Marvel continuity to decide this after the Phoenix/Shi'ar crap for 30-plus years? Brandon Phoenix Murphy just making good points.
The Phoenix just embarrassed, like, the entire galaxy, pretty much. They're having trials about the Phoenix and stuff, you know, just...
Oh, and Black and Nerdy says, the Badoon are the enemies of the old Guardians of the Galaxy. They become the big bads in the distant future when the Kree, Shi'ar aren't big players. Yeah, I'm still reading the last iteration of Guardians of the Galaxy with DNA. So I'm only on like issue 4. I still have a lot to go.
The Shi'ar are always on their last breath. It's like they've been like waiting to die off for the last 20 years, and then like Lalandra will pop up, then she'll lose her mind, then she'll go away somewhere, then she'll come back. But they've always been on the brink of extinction.
She's dead now.
I can remember. Is she?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When did that finally happen?
During the DNA cosmic, whatever, rule in the cosmic Marvel universe.
Oh,
they killed her off in
during War of Kings.
Yeah, War of Kings.
Right.
She and Xavier together in the great after.
She stopped checking for Xavier a while ago. Well, we're done.
Who commands the Shi'ar? Is it Deathbird?
Gladiator
now. You don't like his Savage Dragon inspired mohawk?
It's more like Jack Kirby Omak inspired mohawk.
Wow. True enough.
He was great in the sequel to Juggernaut, bitch. But that's
Brandon Murphy also says if the Brandon, you just instead of putting it in the comments, you can just go back to Google.
Get it right, Brandon.
It says if the Earth is off limits, why in the blank are the Inhumans on the planet, since they are Kree-esque characters? And he says, yeah, Lilandra is dead as of War of Kings. And Black and Nerdy said, oh yeah, he said the Badoons are before DNA. They wreck the universe during the Charlie 27 major victory Starheart Nikki days.
Here's a question.
Also, Lilandra got taken out by Darkhawk, Tim.
No. Oh yeah, he was possessed or something, right?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Isn't that great where, like, you're never tried for your crimes because you just weren't in control of your power? That happens so much.
Cyclops.
Wonder Woman kills a dude on national television. Yeah. And it's like, oh, she was compelled to do it.
Yes.
Our jails won't hold her. Now, did the DNA thing ever finish telling the story of Vulcan? Because that really pissed me off, where I was following like the third Summers brother, and then they decide to combine that with the cosmic stuff. And I was just like, nah, I ain't got time for that.
Vulcan and someone got sucked into something. Someone listening and watching will let me know what happened with that.
Because I know that, like, Polaris and Havoc somehow made it back to Earth, but I'm, like, 2 years behind on X-Factor, so I don't quite know how they did that.
Oh, Brandon Murphy says, Darkhawk was possessed by the amulet on his suit, a la Blue Beetle. As a member of the Raptors, Vulcan was killed by Black Bolt. Yeah, Black Bolt.
Oh, Black Bolt opened his mouth.
Yeah.
Such a dumb power. I hate that guy so fucking much.
Black and Nerdy says the Order of Raptors possessed in Dark Hearts, a league of space assassins. The possessed excuse is Wolverine's only excuse. He doesn't even apologize.
Yeah. Well, I was talking to somebody today, and this is probably a controversial stance, but you really have to think of it this way, that, like, Wolverine, especially in the movies, like we were talking about earlier, he's essentially a rape survivor who's dealing with guilt. Like, his mind was raped by Weapon X. He didn't have control. They violated him in ways he had no control over. So then it lends you that sympathy because you're like, well, they did all this stuff to him, and he's just on this quest for truth. That's how the movies play it. It's like, please just help him find out the truth because they violated him in these unspeakable ways, and just let him get his life back. But that's not fully true, because the comics are like, yeah, they violated him, but he did some terrible, terrible shit while he did it. And then there's also the question of maybe at some point he wasn't being brainwashed. You know, it's like you do it so long, we don't know when their programming stopped. He just liked killing.
That's a good point.
Yeah, and there was the animal side too, you know, like whether or not, you know, like the whole berserker thing, whether or not he lets that take over. So that was another aspect of it.
Well, I mean, it's like, this is terrible, but like genetically, he's got a good strand of white trash in him. Like, he's already waiting for shit to go down. Like, his dad was the gardener. He's like the beer swilling, scotch swilling gardener, you know, like who ended up banging the rich girl. So, like, he's got that, like, class shock going on inside of him anyway, that class warfare.
Black and Nerdy says, Weaponettes, the Hand, Quinn and Choir, Demons, etc. take over Wolverine every other Tuesday.
Yep.
Speaking of Wolverine, Wolverine and the X-Men 27 came out this week. This book has just been stagnant for the longest.
Yeah, it's not going anywhere.
Is Bachalo still drawing it? Because no. I don't want to go anywhere near it.
Nah, he left a while ago. He did the opening arc.
If you could draw ADD, it would be Chris Bachalo art.
Yeah. This isn't much better, but it's Ramon Perez is on the pencils this time. And actually, I'd say a slight improvement. This was with 26 I actually started reading this book, you know, so I just jumped on because I was refusing for a while to look at Wolverine and the X-Men because this whole Jean Grey school, I just thought it was terrible.
The book was fun, I want to say, up until they had the Murder Circus art that went on too long.
Yeah,
and then this,
I agree.
The new Hellfire Club, I'm not liking.
Is that little that Murder kid Circus still in thing charge took it off of the rails. There was that kid who, like, didn't he, like, kill off the Hellfire Club and take it over in, like, the first two issues or something?
The Kitty Hellfire Club is in effect right now.
Yeah, and they're like, an ongoing threat. You know, for some reason, you know, the X-Men have not taken them down yet. So, you know, they're pretty much just waiting in the wings for that to, you know, come to a head.
And it's been 27 issues. Why haven't they blown up the mansion yet? You know, that happens, like, annually.
It's because it's alive, because Krakoa is there, you know?
Oh, right.
Yeah. And then this arc is taking place in the Savage Land. Wolverine basically takes, his special class or his kids, which I'm sorry, but Quentin Quire and Glob Herman were also in the special class back when Xavier had relaunched his school. You know, have they not, like, come out of that? Has Glob Herman actually progressed as a student in all these years?
That's another thing. Let me rant on these whack-ass characters they've created. Glob and iBoy and Shark Girl.
Yeah, I got problems with iBoy.
You clearly skipped the Morrison years, because we had Sammy the Fish Boy, we had Beach.
That's what I'm talking about. Glob Herman was part of that special class with Beak and Sam. And,
yes, well, I skipped the Morrison years. I'm glad I did.
Yeah. But Morrison, the thing I liked about that, and it seems like there's a hint of it here, was prior to that, we only saw mutants who had a tactical advantage. Like, we saw people, and if they didn't, they died, like Doug Ramsey. But you never saw the person, like, who, when his powers manifested, he always smelled like feet. You know, like, that was his mutant power. He just smells like feet. That's not going to help anything. But there's some kid out there suffering from that. So, like,
Bibbler.
Exactly. They call him Dr. Scholes. Like, Morrison's arc would have had Dr. Scholes on the team.
Okay, some comments here. Black and Nerdy says, Wolverine stabbed Rachel Summers when he wasn't possessed. He wanted to gut Hope a few times. Wolverine apparently won't kill 12-year-olds. Apparently, when a kid's 15, 16, Wolverine is down for stabbing.
It's the period blood.
Oh, my God.
Damn. And remember the old man Logan storyline? That was basically, you know, you found out in the past he had wound up accidentally killing the X-Men.
Yeah.
Who did?
Wolverine
and the...
And he tried to kill himself by putting his head on a train track, and it didn't work.
Y'all don't read all that stuff.
Oh, you need to read
that. That was actually pretty good. That's
awesome. Mark Millar is really good on Wolverine. Like, I know he gets a lot of flack because he's like a shameless self-promoter, but you should read that, and you should read Enemy of the State, where once again he's possessed. This time he's possessed by the Hand, and he kills...
Doesn't Bachalo draw that?
No,
John Romita.
John Romita Jr., yeah.
It was good. It was good.
Let's see. Black and Nerdy also says Glob Herman is a spy for Hellfire Club. Interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
And Sammy the Fish Boy was a Chuck Austin creation?
He was.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah.
I just meant that era. Because Austin had Uncanny.
Black Tom, Cassidy.
And
maybe two issues after Juggernaut slept with She-Hulk.
Brandon Murphy says, don't you dare say a bad thing about Beak or Mammo Max. See what they've done to my X-Men franchise, that holds so dear to my heart.
Of Barnell Bohusk.
just bastardizing my X-Men franchise. These lame-ass characters.
Yeah, but anyway, in Wolverine and the X-Men, Wolverine's brother is back, all the way from Wolverine Origin, Dog.
Yeah, the guy we all thought was Sabretooth, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Dog Logan comes back and or debuts as an adult and reveals to Logan that he's been like trying to track him down all these years, which he's been doing a shitty job if it took him that long to find him.
Well, if you read Wolverine the End, which is like the bookend to Origin, that's like he also finds him again in the future. Like he eventually becomes bad, but this is like his debut in the present day.
Yeah. And you know, yes, he's a foil to Wolverine, but his reason for coming isn't just to kill Wolverine. He pretty much wants to show him up. And he does that by, you know, taking these kids that are on assignment in the Savage Land and kind of like imprisoning Wolverine or trapping him and then taking over the lesson that Wolverine's trying to teach these kids about survival in the Savage Land. Interesting or funny panel near the end, Quentin Quire finds out that this guy's Wolverine's brother and he's trying what he's trying to do. And he's like, "You're jealous of Logan? That's pathetic." And he like pretty much just laughs in his face.
So how long do you think before the family reunion of Dakin showing up? Because you know he's back somewhere.
He drowned him. Well, that's the lamest death I think I've ever seen for a character with the healing factor.
When did he get drowned?
In Uncanny X-Force.
Yeah, Wolverine Wolverine killed him.
Yeah, Wolverine did it himself.
But he already fake died when he blew up. So do you really think he's dead?
Well, I think he was dead at the end of that Uncanny X-Force issue.
Yeah, this was revenge for Frankencastle.
Oh. Yeah.
Remember we chopped up the Punisher?
Yeah.
Who cares that much about Punisher to give revenge?
Well, it's not like he didn't come back from pissed. That.
I was pretty pissed when they made Frankencastle. I was like, damn,
yeah,
really?
It was pretty bad.
Did anyone read Thunderbolts 7 this week?
Nope.
That's the one where they're kissing on it, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's I gotta get to that.
The only reason I read this issue was because the artist was different. It was Phil Noto. And not whoever.
Oh, it was Noto?
Guy.
Yeah, oh, I love him.
Slight improvement. Yeah,
slight improvement. The book still sucks.
Yeah. Deadpool is pretty jealous of Punisher banging out Elektra.
But Elektra's got to be just riddled with diseases. Like, the only reason she's still walking is probably because of the hand. Because, like, she uses that tactic quite a bit. Like, I wouldn't go near her. Daredevil's lucky he's blind. Lord knows what's down there.
Deadpool's undead, though, and I don't think he has to worry about STDs.
Does he have his healing factor back?
He does.
Yeah.
He came into Marvel Now with it. But that's I don't think we know how. Oh, well, they learned in the last issue that it basically had like a time limit on it, the cure. So like your factor would come back, but we didn't know if it would come back before he got shot.
Yeah. But the story does advance, but all while on a submarine. So there's not much to really tell there, you know, and it's kind of more the same story arc from before, you know, with the red leader in tow.
Brandon Murphy says Thunderbolts is horrible.
There's a red leader?
Yeah, well, yeah. Oh, my God. The leader, and he's red.
Everything's got to be red in this book.
Yeah.
Is that Betty Brant, too? Not Betty Brant, the what's her name? Ross?
Yeah. She's Red Hulk. Well, she's Red She-Hulk in her own book.
Yeah.
But she's not in this.
Oh, no. This is the original leader. I don't know if it's a clone or what. But,
Sam Stern?
He brought her back. He's reanimated. Red Hulk. Brought him back to life somehow.
With gamma radiation.
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Do you need the Thunderbolts in a world that has the Secret Avengers? I know they're at odds with each other, but they're still somewhat redundant.
And this story is so slow, and they hype this book as, like, they're going to be out in the front, and, you know, they're not going to be working from the shadows. They're going to be out front taking on all these ultra threats, and all they've been doing is sitting on this island for 7 issues.
Yeah, trying to overthrow a country.
Is General Ross still a commissioned officer? Because he really should have gotten court-martialed by now.
I don't believe so.
Good.
I don't believe so. My understanding is that he was dead, so I don't think he has a commission anymore.
But Betty was dead, too.
They've all been dead. They got better.
That's right.
Well, any other books anyone want to bring up real quick before we end for tonight?
Scarlet Spider, real quick, they progressed the story with Scarlet Spider, Kane taking on the Lobo brothers, but also being possessed by the other, if you remember the spider totem angle, or storyline from years ago. So Kane is like, you know, the Scarlet Spider has kind of united with and been resurrected by this other spider totem. You know, so he's kind of been reborn in the span of an issue. He's also ripped off one of the werewolves, Lobo Brothers' arms. Oh, I would say the Lobo Brothers, but it's like Carlos and his sister because Eduardo's dead. But, you know, the people behind the Lobo Brothers or the mastermind is bringing more people in, so that's going to be the next issue. I read Flash. There's not much to report about that. They're going after the Trickster for some reason. And
anyone read Green Hornet?
No.
Green Hornet.
They have a new number one with Mark Waid writing it. I'm going to try to check that out.
Mm-hmm. Did anybody read Uncanny X-Force 3?
I did. It was good.
I liked it. It's actually, I think it's going to be worth reading another another one.
I'm enjoying the art by
Ron Garney.
I keep wanting to call him Tom Rainey.
There is a Tom Rainey.
Yeah.
They're very different.
But Tom Rainey's doing something else.
What's funny about Garney's art on this is that whoever's inking and whoever's doing the colors are really, really, you know, bolstering the art. Because Garney, you know, when he pencils, if he's, like, super loose, it looks so messy. So right now, he's got a solid inker and solid coloring that really, like, makes his art pop.
Yeah, I was going to say that's probably the best work I've seen him do ever.
Yeah, because I think whoever's inking him is really laying on the ink thick, you know? Like, he's really putting, like, lots of, you know, highlights and shading in there that Garney's probably not doing.
Black and Nerdy says, how many people are left to kill with two X-Force teams and Secret Avengers around? Thunderbolts is unnecessary.
I agree with that. That's a good point.
Yep.
Well, it's only a matter of time before they end up going after each other.
Yeah.
It's going to be like a Black Ops team crossover.
And Journey into Mystery hit issue 650. I think that's probably Marvel's longest running book now in terms of numbering. They probably won't renumber that. Well, who knows? They renumbered Thor, so, you know. But Sif is a great character in that one.
What are you hunting about?
Yeah.
You don't like Sif?
I that's my main beef with Marvel is just them renumbering books so much. I mean, that pissed me off, especially it was like a few years back with Daredevil 500. Then like 10 issues later, they cancel it. And then they didn't cancel it. Black Panther took over and Black Panther kept that number until that book was canceled. But then Daredevil launched a brand new number one and that always pissed me off with Marvel. And they did it more than once.
And then once they get to what would have been 600, they'll go back.
Yeah,
that's the thing with them is, like, they will always come back for anniversary numbering. So that's what's going to be interesting to watch with Marvel now since they did such a mass renumbering.
Yeah.
I think they're going to keep this going with Journey into Mystery with Lady Sif taking the lead role that Thor had all these years, you know, with the book. They're pretty much telling much of the same story. It's basically adventures in and around Asgard, which is now in, you know, in Broxton, Oklahoma. But Lady Sif is, you know, a very strong lead character and, you know, and very interesting. I've actually been enjoying this book since she's been on it.
Really?
Yeah.
I gotta go back and read it then.
Yeah, Catherine Eminent writing it, and Valerio Schitti, or Schitti, is the artist. It's spelled S-C-H-I-T-I, but it could be Schitti. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't
who's on this art? It's Schitti.
It's very
Schitti.
Listen, you know, I'm glad that I'm glad that somebody I know liked it, because, you know, when I read the first issue, you know, I wasn't so keen on the whole Berserker, you know, spell thing. So I'm glad that you've stuck with it this long.
Yeah, and, you know, if they drew me in last month because Superior Spider-Man, you know, had a guest appearance.
Okay.
So, you know, you want to see more Spider-Ock, but, yeah, I've been keeping up with it for a while. It's a, you know, it's a decent read. In terms of books led by Marvel women, you know, that and Captain Marvel, you know, are pretty good reads in my opinion.
Fearless Defenders was some shit, but I didn't want to start anything with Eclectic Online. That was a terrible, terrible book.
I like Fearless Defenders.
It was okay.
I hope you like it quickly. That book won't have more than 12 issues.
Damn.
We shall see.
One of my friends, I was texting, you know, earlier today, and when he found out about Nova's creative team switching, he said the over-under on a Nova book is 24 issues. And how much longer do y'all think it will last?
Until they decide to cancel it, just because Loeb was attached to it.
Well, you got to factor in double shipping, too. So it could easily do 12 issues because that's just 6 months. So, but, like, you got a point. There's certain characters that just can't hold a book. Blade has never had more than 13 issues but has 3 successful movies. So it'll probably coast out the movie wave for, like, Guardians of the Galaxy. I think it'll stick around until we get Guardians of the Galaxy. They may relaunch it, but I think we will have a Nova book at that point.
You're also forgetting Sam Alexander is in the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon show, which they want to keep shoving down our throats.
You know why his name's Sam, right?
Yeah, I kind of figured.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's his son, because his Loeb's son died of cancer when he was writing Superman Batman, and issue number 26 is completely, like, dedicated to him. So when he got on here, that's why this guy is Sam.
See, I keep trying not to think of that because I want to dislike the character and Loeb and whatnot.
Yeah, because he was only, like, 16, too. It was really sad, but...
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I wanted to hate Nova so much, you know, and I wound up actually, you know, I'm actually digging the book.
I thought I'd like Guardians of the Galaxy and dislike Nova, but it's actually flip-flop. And Black and Nerdy says, I dug Journey into Mystery as well. Seems like other writers present us with a better Otto Parker than a certain writer.
Oh,
I have feedback to read from the website before we end tonight. Coles of the Podcast, I believe I know this user and this website and podcast. It's a great episode of CBC. Love the banner between the participants and cried tears during the Chuck Austin talk of sadness, not laughter.
Yeah.
Dirt. I think this was a post on Adam Black's. What was that last thing you posted?
That was about the main one was Extermination Alpha and G.I. Joe Special Missions.
He says, personally, I prefer disappeared. Sometimes they're dead. Sometimes they're hiding. Sometimes they have amnesia. And sometimes no one knows.
Disappeared is much better.
Is that on TV One?
I have no idea what that
is. It comes on after Unsung.
Unsung. Find or missing. Is
it's like, where is Bookman?
And Sean Martineau, I believe this comment was on our last Comic Book Chronicles. He facepalm during the DC news, and we were talking about all the people quitting books before they even started. I agree with the killing of Guy Gardner. Baz is too new. Hal was dead for a while. John is the Green Lantern everyone knows, and Kyle is just. Kyle is a personal bias. I've heard that even Didio doesn't have that much say anymore, though he seems to be the guy everyone jumps to attack. Those prints are nice as hell, when I was showing my prints from the comic convention. Him and Jesus are coming back at the same time. It was beautiful. Shout outs to William B. West. Y'all didn't mention Nightwing for Justice League. Disappointed. Finally, Nightwing gets mentioned. A standard monthly issue of Aquaman goes into the bank. I really enjoyed the artist discussion towards the end. While I agree I would never buy a Bagley poster, funnily enough, I have a Bagley F4 poster I got free from my local comic shop. I would totally buy a LaRocca poster. Another person I would add to the get shit done on time list, even though he's relatively new, is David Marquez. He's come in several times to help out on Bendis books when the regulars have needed fill-ins, and his art is incredible. Great show, guys. Looking forward to next time. Thanks, Sean. Hope you're watching tonight.
If I could plug for Sean for a second, he also runs he's also on the Mixed Marvel Arts podcast. You know, so you could check that out. They're on Libsyn. Just look up like Mixed Marvel Arts, like Mixed Martial Arts, except they only talk Marvel. And their latest episode is called Cosmic Badonkadonk, and they're talking about all of the stuff that's going on in the Marvel's cosmic universe.
I'm going to check that out. Are they on iTunes?
They are on iTunes and Libsyn also.
Okay. I'll check it out. So, you put the link in the chat. Thanks.
Yeah, link's in the chat there.
All right. So, I think we've been yapping long enough. Want to thank everyone for tuning in tonight. Will, we brought you on, but I didn't let you plug your different ventures, so go right ahead.
Oh, why, thank you. You can read my ramblings at williambrucewest.com. You can buy my toys and graphic novels at willswonders.com. So, yeah. Or follow me on Twitter at William B. West. But I say tits a lot, so I'm warning you. I don't want you to follow and then unfollow.
You don't condone that around these parts.
Tits. do you say big old bitties like Terrence Howard does? Or?
I don't want Oprah coming after me.
The Oprah Lottie.
Some big breasts.
Big old bitties.
Adam Nurses. Black, any shout outs you want to give Adam Black?
Shout out to you guys for letting me get on.
Follow him on Twitter at @the_Adam_Black.
Yes, sir.
Follow me on Twitter at @TimDogg98 and at @TheClickNation. And, of course, go to TheClickNation.com. Agent_70 on Twitter.
That's right.
At Classic Materia, no L, on Twitter. And at Cult with a Pod on Twitter. And also check out the CultsLitherPodcast.com. Did I miss anything? Oh, and also our man Eclectic, the third member of the Cult Slitter podcast. Check him out.
He ain't here. Don't.
He's at Eclectic and at Podcast EDP. And subscribe on iTunes and Stitcher Radio to the Eclectic Discussion podcast. So great for show. The distinguished guest here tonight, I want to say thanks for tuning in to this episode of Comic Book Chronicles. As far as I know, we'll be back next Thursday night, 9 p.m. Eastern Time. Look for that. The show will be up on the website, theclicknation.com, so you can watch live streaming or just go back and watch it later if you don't have time to watch live. Thank you all for tuning in, and we are signing off.
Bye.
See ya.
Peace.
This wasn't no movie. The smart thing was to say yes, get up, and leave the room. But then I thought to myself, what if this was a movie? Look, you, the plane you flew in on, them shoes, your socks with the bell on it, your gay-ass accent, them cheap-ass cigars, your yuck-mouth teeth, your hairpiece, your chocolate, Guy Ritchie, Prince William, the Queen. This is America. My president is black and my Lambo is blue, nigga. Now get the out of my hotel room. And if I see you in the street, I'm slapping the out of you.
bad boys harassment. Just in competition when the war does the mission. Not no mercy, see the race like the street. If you don't know, you better find out the war pack. It'll prove a point, number one, just believe that you don't want to tussle with them. I'll be there for them, come in the grave with them. You're never walking out again until you're back on the war pack. Turn your back on the wolf pack. You might wind up in a body bag.